documentary. Commissioner of the Metropolitan Police, Sir Mark Rayleigh, said last night,
I understand the people of London are going to be really upset by this. Some it will cause to question the trust they hold the police in. And we depend on that trust so much. Without it, we can't succeed in keeping them safe.
Sir Mark will join us live later in the show. The COVID fraud and cheat caught out £122 million to pay back. They're Michelle Moan. Chancellor Rachel Reeves said yesterday,
I want to be clear, anyone who got a government contract, either during COVID or at other times where the contract was not being fulfilled, we will come after that money.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock. An overhaul of asylum rules will see refugees lose their right to bring their families to the UK. Ministers are also planning a new, longer route to permanent settlement for refugees whose applications are accepted. Sir Keir Starmer is to discuss the plans at a meeting of European leaders in Denmark. The Conservative former Immigration Minister Kevin Foster's told LBC it's a step in the right direction.
Generally, do I think it's the right move? Yes. Do I think they're going in the right direction? Yes. It's certainly a welcome change from just telling us smash the gangs. They're looking at a wider strategy, although a lot of that's because clearly smash the gangs didn't work. It was a slogan. So now they're looking at a wider approach. I suspect it'll be interesting to see whether they now go further with some of the other things.
The head of the Metropolitan Police has described behaviour uncovered in secret filming as reprehensible. Officers at Charing Cross Police Station are being investigated over allegations of racism, misogyny and excessive force. London's Mayor Sir Sadiq Khan says he is disgusted and appalled. LBC's Fraser Knight has more details.
The undercover filming captured officers sharing alleged extreme racist views, sexist comments, and boasting about their use of force against detainees, including a teenager with autism. And the revelations have now led to a lengthy apology from the commissioner, who said it would cause some to question if their sons and daughters would be safe in our cells. The independent police watchdog is investigating 11 people in the station here who've since been suspended. Fraser Knight, LBC, at Charing Cross.
The Met Police Commissioner Sir Mark Rowley will be speaking to Nick later in the programme. Israeli authorities have intercepted at least 13 boats from a Gaza-bound aid flotilla. The environmental campaigner Greta Thunberg was among the passengers arrested and taken to the port of Ashdod. The flotilla's organisers say dozens of vessels are still heading towards the territory. The Conservative leader Kemi Badenoch has promised to scrap Britain's landmark climate legislation. Repealing the Climate Change Act would remove a series of legally enshrined targets on greenhouse gas emissions. The Tories say they'd replace it with a strategy for cheap and reliable power. Arsenal's winning start to the Champions League continued as they beat Olympiacos 2-0 last night. Manchester City conceded a 90th minute penalty as they drew 2-2 with Monaco, and Newcastle thrashed Union Saint-Gilloise 4-0 in Belgium. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen this morning at 94.46 after closing up 96 yesterday. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.14. LBC weather. Cloudy with spells of rain for many places. Drier in southeast England. A high of 20 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
If I get my kid a phone, I'll be able to keep in touch with him all the time.
He'll be on it all the time.
Could walk to school by himself.
She could see something she shouldn't.
He could chat with grandma.
Friends. Trolls.
They can access anything on the internet.
They can access anything on the internet.
So, should I give my kid a phone?
Growing up with phones isn't always easy. Introducing EE Safer Sims. Sims that help moderate usage and shield harmful content on any smartphone. Choose EE Safer Sims. Only on the UK's best network.
To verify best network, see ee.co.uk/claims.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. It's 3 minutes after seven on Thursday, October the 2nd. Apparently I got the date wrong. My apologies. October the 2nd. Let's get that absolutely right. Coming up in this hour, the Rochdale gang faced decades behind bars for the rape of children. A truly shocking case. We'll give you full details of that in just a moment. Also shock down here in London for the Metropolitan Police. Footage captured by the BBC on the Panorama show broadcast last night, PC Phil Nielsen from the Met, speaking unknowingly to an undercover BBC journalist.
I've seen too many Islamists committing crimes. Their way of life is not the correct way of life.
By the way, did you watch it last night? Because there was an enormous glitch towards the end and suddenly an advert came up for Radio 3. Now, whether that was my own Skybox playing up, I don't know. And then there just a slate came up, we're trying to get you the programme back, and then it came back a bit and then it went again. But is that just me? I've just asked my colleague, who quite rightly was asleep, I think, and she needs to be because she's had to get up so early. So was it just my TV? I didn't see the whole damn thing. Anyway, very important story, and we will have the Commissioner of the Met later in the show. We've just come away from the Labour Party conference, but they're still coming up with ideas. Automatic rights for refugees to be scrapped. Siobhana Mahmood said this to the Labour delegates earlier in the week.
Until we can decide who comes in and who must leave, we will never be the generous country that I know we all believe in.
Things going from bad to worse for shamed peer Michelle Moan. She was last night under pressure to pay back £122 million, but surely she should be booted out of the House of Lords, shouldn't we? She? And in other news...
A mum from Lancashire whose son took his own life in a hospital toilet says she's scared at the prospect of ever having to go there herself. I'm LBC's Chris Chambers with the story.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
You're going to hear some pretty gruesome details in our next conversation, then I'll be asking... Can we be absolutely confident this isn't still going on in some cities or towns in this country? Seven men given long prison sentences. My LBC colleague Liam Gotti will go in more detail in just a moment. But let me share just some of the language from the court. Two extremely vulnerable girls, a campaign of rape over several years, treated as sex slaves by Asian grooming gangs from the age of 13, and told to have sex whenever and wherever the men wanted it. Whether it was on rancid mattresses in back alleyways or in cars or above fast food shops. I've told you this is going to be fairly distressing listening. In chillingly inappropriate language, again, this is court testimony, one girl, identified as Girl B, had been called a prostitute at the age of 10. Here with all the details, LBC's Northwest reporter Liam Gotting, who was at a Crown Court in Manchester yesterday. Liam, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, the court heard how 68-year-old Mohammed Zahid, known as Boss Man, met and groomed two girls by giving them free underwear from his market stall in Rochdale, expecting regular sex for him and his friends in return. The girls were sexually exploited from the age of 13 in filthy flats, car parks, alleyways and disused warehouses around Rochdale. Referred to as Girl A and Girl B, the court heard how they were treated as sex slaves and expected to have sex with the men whenever and wherever they wanted it. Both girls had deeply troubled home lives and were plied with drugs, alcohol and cigarettes. Liz Fell from the CPS spoke outside court after the sentencing yesterday.
None of the defendants have shown the slightest remorse for what they have put the survivors through. By maintaining their denials and refusing to accept responsibility, they force these brave women to relive the abuse they suffered at their hands over a five-month trial.
Now, the judge described the two victims as highly vulnerable girls who were abused, degraded, discarded and seriously let down by those whose job it was to protect them. Sentencing Zahid, the judge said he led a campaign of rape, showing a chilling disregard for the victims and a lack of humanity. He said it must have been a truly terrifying ordeal for the two girls and Zahid simply didn't care. Ruth Spencer, a support officer from Greater Manchester Police, read a statement outside court on behalf of Girl B.
I have felt shame and guilt all my life for what these men did. I still suffer with social anxiety. I am unable to trust anyone and I cannot take people at face value. I have no expectations of anyone. My life has been on hold for the last 20 years. I have never been able to move on from the abuse and this has not just impacted my life and what I could have achieved, but also my children's lives. They have become victims of these men too. This whole process has been the most positive thing I have ever done. Standing in the courtroom and being able to have my own voice was the hardest thing I've ever been through, but the best experience. I was able to tell my truth, and I now know that my voice matters because I was believed.
Well, Zahid was given the largest prison sentence of 35 years in prison, but in total, seven men were sentenced to a combined total of 174 years. There was not a single reaction from any of the men in the dock as they were sentenced. And concluding, the judge paid tribute to the two victims, one of which was in court to see the sentencing, praising their courage to come forward and help put these seven men behind bars.
Liam Gotting reporting 9 minutes after seven. So let's just go through those sentences again. As Liam rightly said, it's an eye-watering number of years. The ringleader, Mohammed Zahid, 35 years. Naheem Akram, 26 years. Mohammed Shahzad, 26 years. Rohis Khan, 12 years. Nisar Hussein, 19 years. Mushtaq Ahmed, 27 years. And Kazir Bashir, 29 years. But he has absconded, believed to be living outside of the United Kingdom. And obviously what links all of these is that they are of Pakistani origin. And that's something else we need to explore. Maggie Oliver, former Greater Manchester Police Detective, was the whistleblower, founder and chair of the Maggie Oliver Foundation. And I've had the privilege of speaking with Maggie a number of occasions. Good to have you on. Mixed emotions, I imagine, for you here, Maggie, because you have been talking about this for more than a decade, so that must be frustration. But I would imagine, and I've just gone through the sentences, that must give you some, not glee, but some, at least some relief that they're going to get long stretches. Maggie, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yeah, you're absolutely right, actually. The sentences, for the first time, actually reflect the magnitude of the horrors that children like these two girls live through. This is a textbook example of what I've been talking about, shouting about for, you know, well over a decade. But, you know, when I resigned from GMP, you know, a man
Greater
who got
Manchester
a little...
Police.
Greater Manchester
no,
Police, sorry.
I'm just explaining to my listeners. No, sorry, go ahead, Maggie.
Yeah. You know, the man who got a little girl pregnant and we had a fetus, he was out of prison in less than 4 years. And it horrified me. So these sentences finally reflect the magnitude of the crime. I hope it will send out a strong message. It will be a deterrent to those who are raping children today. But the judge also said that they had been serious, these girls had been seriously let down by the authorities. What I don't want your listeners to go away thinking is that this is a problem of the past. You know, my charity, we are helping many, many people today who are still being failed by the authorities. So the strength of these young women, you know, they've spent 20 years of their lives trying to be heard. It shouldn't have taken that long. The other thing, Nick, is that some of those names that you have just read out, we were aware of in 2010 when I worked on that Rochdale case. We are 15 years on from that. How many other children have these men raped in those years? So this is not the end of the story, but it is a step in the right direction, and it kind of makes me feel that all the, you know, I feel a bit like a broken record sometimes. It's like Groundhog Day. But finally, the public are aware, fully aware. I think this is a win for people power. I don't believe without the country rising up and calling for action in this that we would have seen these sentences. So I do think it's a step in the right direction.
Let me ask you to remind the listeners, from memory, Maggie, it was called Operation Span, wasn't it, that you got involved in with 2010. What that was set up to do, and how you suddenly started to unravel the horrors that you were working with, Maggie.
Yeah, I mean, what horrified me, and that wasn't the first case, Nick. I'd worked on Operation Augusta in 2005, and Greater Manchester Police closed down that case with 97 rapists that we knew were abusing children. We had over three dozen children, it turns out now, more than 70. You know, I was already full of horror for what had happened on that case. And when I saw what happened in Rochdale, I couldn't live with myself by not speaking out. But naively back then, Nick, I thought that, you know, chief constables, the Home Office, the, you know, Children's Commissioner, the IOPC, I didn't believe then that they knew what was going on. I have absolutely not one shred of doubt now that they all knew, and they deliberately turned away, and they decided that these children were just not worth fighting for, that the resources and the money needed to investigate these rapists was not worth investing. And that horror, you know, as as a human being, but more so, Nick, as a police officer, I promise to uphold the law. Yes. And child rape is the most heinous crime. And, you know, in my charity now, we are supporting victims and survivors who 20 years on will never be able to really come to terms with the failures of the authorities to protect them. And it's the duty of police and social services to protect children. So I get really angry, I'm sorry, but
no,
I do.
No, no, listen, you have nothing to apologise for the work you've done. One thing, though, just lastly, when we first started chatting, Maggie, you used the words children are still being raped, and we have touched on this before. How convinced are you that is taking place and what needs to be done?
I'm not convinced. We have the facts. And, I mean, I know it's another conversation, Nick, but, you know, this, in inverted commas, new national inquiry, the government now are tiptoeing around it, trying to water it down. You know, Baroness Casey made it very clear, and I met Baroness Casey. I took many survivors to meet her. She was very clear that this is still going on and we need action, but the government are trying to water down this inquiry, trying to say, you know, are we going to cover CSA as well? Are we going to cover all group-based abuse? We need to look at it's called grooming gangs. They are rape gangs. We need the data, we need the ethnicity, we need the facts, and we need action. And there is still authorities dragging the feet in dealing with it.
And is it still, lastly, Maggie, fueled by fear of upsetting minority relations?
I think that's a big part of it. I think it's also MPs looking at their own seat in Parliament and not wanting to
alienate the local vote.
Yeah, I think there's a big part of that going on as well. But you know what? I won't stop shouting out. My charity will give people a voice. Right. And, you know, I'm not going away. So
Maggie, you know I'm only ever an email away, so you can shout on the radio. Oh, I won't say quite as regularly as you want to, but we'll make sure that you get on as often as we can to help you along. Maggie Oliver, thank you. I'm an email away. You're the former GMP, Greater Manchester Police Detective, behind Operation Span and all of that. Now, writing in one of the newspapers today, a very experienced solicitor, Marcus Johnson, tells the Daily Express he's with the firm CPCD, which seems a good idea. While it's satisfying that they've heard such a successful operation, why aren't these people immediately sent back to Pakistan, extradited? That would seem to make sense, wouldn't it? I have no idea how much it's going to cost to keep these people in jail for 35 years, 26 years, 26 years. Obviously, they weren't served full-time, but we're talking decades. We're talking tens of thousands of pounds, maybe hundreds. Shouldn't they just be down the next plane to Pakistan? We'll take your views on that. Also, after the news.
A company linked to Baroness Moan must pay the government £122 million back after breaching COVID PPE rules. I'm LBC's Natasha Clark with all the latest.
More on that after the 7:16 LBC news headlines read by Thomas Watts.
Ministers have announced plans to scrap refugees' rights to bring their families to Britain. The Home Secretary has described undercover footage from a police station in London as sickening, and Israeli authorities say they have stopped a number of boats from an aid flotilla trying to reach Gaza. LBC weather, cloudy with spells of rain for many places, drier in the southeast, a high of 20 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays on the M25 anti-clockwise from junction 30 at the A13 to 28 at the A12. It's following an accident. All the lanes are open now, but it's still very slow. Also, it's still very busy on the A12 northbound from the M25 to junction 12 at Mount Nessing, and that was after an investigation from earlier. The A40 is extremely busy going eastbound from the Target roundabout at Northolt to the Medway underpass, and that's where a coach has broken down, so one lane is closed for recovery. Better news on East Midlands Railway. Those delays to and from St Pancras have cleared, but Thames Link between St Pancras and Luton are still delayed by about 15 minutes after an investigation earlier.
This is LBC.
Private healthcare sounds pricey.
At Benenden Health, it's less than £16 per person per month.
Just for GP calls.
For a 24/7 GP helpline, physio, diagnostics and more. Now, tell me.
All about my medical history.
No medical questionnaires or hidden charges. We like to call it
healthcare done different.
Spot on. Benenden Health. Healthcare done different. Fee review periodically. 6-month wait for some services. T&Cs apply. Selected surgical procedures after 6 months. 24 in Northern Ireland. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
It's right up here in the London Eye.
But imagine being inside. Perfect panoramic views of the capital from iconic pods.
Then get two Sun Super Days tickets to the London Eye. 34,000 available from £19 and thousands on the Sun for free.
Pick up the paper this Saturday to start collecting. Only in the Sun.
T's and C's apply. Even for seagulls.
This year, Amazon are increasing the electric delivery vehicles we use across Europe to 10,000. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where babies are made a fuss of. Where we deliver footballs for kids' kickabouts, and where they deliver the football straight into next door's garden. Can they have their ball back, please? We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Delivery service partner vehicles across the UK and EU.
Okay. I want you to close your eyes and think of your car. Now I want you to imagine yourself selling that car and getting a really great price for it. You just got the best offer for your car, like 500,000 other customers. It's not magic, it's Motorway. Sell your car for more at motorway.co.uk. 84% of sellers got more than market price for their car, validated against two independent sources. Visit motorway.co.uk/claims.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
20 minutes after 7. I like this idea from Stephen Long. I don't normally start the show with the texts or the emails, but we are at our best when we're at our boldest. Who said that? It was Tony Blair decades ago. Stephen Long suggests chuck Michelle Moan out of the House of Lords and give her seat to Maggie Oliver. It's not a bad idea, is it? Meanwhile, Jane in Cromer, well done to Maggie Oliver. I'm hoping the convicted get a welcome in prison they never forget. It's wrong, isn't it, to wish ill on fellow human beings or fellow man? But in this case, I totally agree with you. And the sort of welcome that might be awaiting them, having committed a string of rapes and other sexual offences on girls in their early teens, you can just imagine what's waiting for them. Let's hope they're having to look over their shoulder for the rest of their time in jail. And I know that's appalling sentiment. I get it. It's a really base sentiment. But you know what? On this occasion, I don't care. We couldn't go into some of the detail of the sexual activity that took place for obvious reasons. You'll understand. We couldn't even tell you the full story. It is horrific. Quickly through the front pages, and then we'll get to... excuse me, we'll get to your reactions. James, you're going to be on the radio very quickly. This is the front page of... Actually, I think only one of the newspapers gets a bit of the front page, but it's the full front page of the Daily Express, the line that Maggie Oliver was just saying there, that let down by those whose job it was to protect them. The gang jailed for a total of 174 years, although, of course, one of them is on the lam, is on the run, believed to be living outside of the UK. The Baroness Moan story is front page news. Baroness, of course, she invented it. I think it was the Ultimo bra, a very successful range of lingerie. Don't quote me as Ultimo, but I think I'm right. So she's known as Baroness Bra. That's her headline in the Mail. Baroness Bra told handbacker £122 million and the peerage. That's the aspect that we will be looking at. The Daily Mirror stripper of the title, same aspect there. The Sun goes with the cash one. Cough up COVID, £122 million. And lastly, the Times, automatic rights for refugees to be scrapped. We'll be hearing from a government minister, what was that, 3 days after the Justice Secretary spoke, 2 days after the Prime Minister spoke. They now give us this initiative. I know it's because the PM's in Copenhagen. I get it, but that does seem odd. Quickly to the LBC app. And they're going with Starmer vows to end the golden ticket for refugees. I say again, there will be a government minister with more on that. And quickly to Sky News, and they are following up from that shocking BBC documentary. And by the way, thank you for letting me know, a lot of you, that it suddenly went with about 10 minutes to go. We just got an advert for Radio 3. Can you imagine the fury? They can't even get the damn documentary out right. They've lost the boat race. They've got a cracking show. Well done to all the journalists, the editors and everyone else involved in it. And you go and screw it up with 10 minutes to go. How do you... And then you put an advert on for Radio 3. Oh, dear, it was shambolic. Anyway, the commissioner... See, by the way, I may as well show I'm not particularly well today. I'm not going to tell you what the reasons are, but I'm not particularly well. Many of you would probably stay in bed. But frailty is not indulged, so on we go at 7.23. James in Manchester. James, your reaction to this story. Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Morning. First on the radio, well done.
Thank you for coming on, sir. Appreciate it. Well done.
Yeah, so I just think it's important to keep balance. But firstly, what's happened in Rochdale is totally disgusting, and yep. The people involved need the sentence that they've got, if not more. It's horrendous, and hopefully more perpetrators are caught and put to justice. But I just think in the current climate we are in the UK, it's important on your show especially to keep balance. That there are lots more rape cases involving white middle-aged men, and this has come from a place of experience. My partner is a barrister and does a lot of rape cases. Mostly it's what she does.
Right.
And overwhelmingly, it is not Asian men that are doing it. I'm not excusing what's happened. I just think it's important to keep balance when these news articles come out.
Yes.
And that was my thought.
And I'm grateful to you, but the level of cunning that was applied here and the way that the girls were passed around and the gang aspect and that they're underage... And I'm not being confrontational.
It's
no, but if your partner... Sorry, I can't remember if you said your partner or whatever. If your partner or wife... if they know of cases like that involving white gangs or British gangs or Chinese gangs or whatever it might be, let's hear about them, because that is what is making the news here. It is the gang aspect.
I agree. Yeah. And absolutely. And there are those cases. And if you dig, you can find them. There was one in Bristol involving very young children, and it was white boys, white men that were passing them around, and they were babysitters, allegedly.
Oh, good God.
So it does happen. They just don't seem to hit the news.
I'm grateful. Thank you. And there's another aspect, James, and you'll agree with this. In the next hour, we're going to be talking about 11 what would seem to be shameful police officers within the Metropolitan Force who've engaged in the most appalling sexist, racist, homophobic, and indeed in some aspects of violence. But that's 11 coppers. There are 147,000 police officers in the in England and Wales. 147,000. Again, they shouldn't be judged by 11 men. Yeah, they are all men. 11 men. Just as it is ridiculous to suggest everyone of Pakistani origin living in this country should be judged by these vile sex perverts. Good point you make, James. Best wishes to your partner. Thank you. 7:25. Kevin in Basingstoke. Kevin, your reaction. Good morning.
Morning. Well, I want to agree with James, really. First thing, you can't support these people to Pakistan if Pakistan doesn't want to take them
back. No, I know. I know.
And also, we always hear about grooming gangs that are Pakistani. There are white grooming gangs, but we never hear about those.
Well,
I've never once heard you talk about white grooming gangs.
Well, hold on a second. Remind me when they got 107 of them got 174 years.
Well,
remind me, then I'll talk about it.
If you've been sexually abused by a man, does it make any difference?
No, of course it doesn't. But the sheer scale... I mean, I hope you were listening to that police officer right at the top. The sheer scale of the offences, the cover-up, the lack of willingness to Greater Manchester Police to investigate, the lack of work by social services, that's what makes this a story of such magnitude, Kevin. And if you can now say that this is going on in Basingstoke or, I don't know, Bodmin, great, we'll be all over it. But I can't see it, Kevin.
Well, I looked online and I've seen some convictions of white grooming gangs, but you haven't mentioned any
Because I'm not well, I've got to calm down here. Let me explain how news works, okay? So when things happen yesterday, that's called news, or today, that's called news. There would be little point me now featuring a story that goes back however many years. Do you understand? There'd be no point talking about Gordon Brown's speech to the Labour Party conference when we're talking about Keir Starmer's. Deal with what is on the news agenda.
Yeah, but you put it on the news agenda.
Manchester Crown Court. The Crown Court in Manchester put it on the news agenda yesterday, Kevin. I didn't make the decision. The judge did.
What about the over 100 reports of sex crimes against children... You don't report on those. Report it to the police. You don't report on those.
Well, listen, I'll try again. When it is relevance, the idea of news is it's new, right? So this was new yesterday and through today and for the newspapers today and reporting on LBC and Sky News and others yesterday. Now, I'm not saying that we don't have conversations about that, but Kevin, just the idea, you're saying we shouldn't be reporting on this because these are men of Pakistani origin. That's wrong, Kevin. That's what led to this abuse going on for 17 years.
No, but the convictions, the day of the convictions when it's somebody
I tell you what, Kevin, you keep making excuses for them. You keep looking the other way and don't listen to someone who respectfully, I think, knows far more than I do and I sense knows more than you, which is the police detective Maggie Oliver. And don't listen to her, but you do it your way.
Certain crimes. crimes.
Well, you can say that. I don't think that's right. And you continue that way and then just let those grooming gangs continue. Kevin, I think we need to agree disagreeably. Oh, I can't even. I'm not even well enough. You know what I'm trying to say. Look after yourself. We'll talk again soon. 7:28. Pressure on Michelle Moon on two fronts there. A, coughing up the money. B, kicking her out of the House of Lords. LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark, reports. Natasha, good morning.
Morning, Nick. Yes, the Tory peer Michelle Moan under pressure both to resign from the House of Lords, as you say, and also to pay back £122 million of taxpayers' cash. Now, that's linked to that company that has been ordered to do so by a court, PPE Medro. It was a consortium set up led by Michelle Moan's husband, Doug Barrowman. A court found yesterday that it had breached a government COVID contract. They delivered millions of hospital gowns that were not sterile. The trial heard that the gowns were rejected after their first UK inspection in September 2020 and never used in the NHS. So 25 million surgical gowns supplied by that company to protect the NHS, they were found to be unusable and could seriously harm or kill patients. Now, two contracts which were awarded to PPE Medro for a total of £203 million became very controversial because they came through this so-called VIP lane. It was operated by Boris Johnson's Conservative government throughout the COVID pandemic. Basically, it was set up to try to get experts into the government quickly when we were all desperately searching for that PPE to keep the NHS going. It gave high priority to people with political connections. The government ordered £122 million worth of gown contracts to PPE Medro and another worth £80 million to supply face masks. And she, Baroness Moan, first got into contact with Michael Gove to get access to that VIP lane. The investigative journalist Russell Scott told LBC yesterday that this is just the tip of the iceberg.
It is the tip of the iceberg. There are lots of cases like this, and in particular linked to sort of rather sort of Tory grandeur in the House of Lords. And all of these sort of characters and the various lords that are mentioned in the documentary in the book, you know, they're still sitting in the House of Lords. There's sort of very little sort of consequences for them yet.
But speaking to the BBC back in 2023, Baroness Moan and her husband issued this grovelling apology.
Hindsight's a wonderful thing. I wasn't trying to pull the wool over anyone's eyes, and I regret and I'm sorry for not saying straight out, yes, I am involved. My family have gone through hell with the media over, you know, my career, and I didn't want another big hoo-ha in the press and my family to be involved in it.
The two contracts in total came to a value of £202 million, and you know, Medpro made a return on its investment of about realistically about 30%.
So about £60 million, or
yeah about that, yeah.
That was Baroness Moan and husband speaking to the BBC. But last night she claimed that she was a victim of an establishment stitch-up. The Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, said that was a bit rich.
The former Conservative peer, Baroness Moan, complaining about the establishment when she got this contract through the previous government's VIP fast lane, is a little bit rich. This is an independent decision from the High Court, and I'm pleased with their decision because they should never have got their hands on this money. And during the pandemic, people made huge sacrifices, separated from their families and loved ones, and yet at the same time, people like Michelle Moan and her company, her husband's company, profiteered on the back of that misery.
But Nick, it's unclear whether and how that money will be able to be clawed back. The firm is basically bankrupt. They filed for administration literally just a few days ago. The company accounts show it's got less than £1 million in it. The judge has ordered a deadline of the 15th of October for the money to be paid back. The Chancellor says the Department for Health has appointed specific lawyers to try to claw back this money. However, lawyers have said that this is going to be tough. The administrator for the firm, if they basically can establish that money has been taken out of the company on unlawful terms, this could see the basis of a claim against those individuals, but it's going to be very tough. And of course, Baroness Moan, stripped of the Tory whip at the moment in the House of Lords, she's on leave but facing calls to leave it entirely.
Is she not in the bank?
Well, obviously, we know that how much money they've taken out of that. £65 million from PPE's Medro was removed. £25 million has been put into a trust to benefit her and her three children. So the question is now, Nick, can they now go after this trust personally to get it back? I've not been able to get an answer, but the Department for Health has said they will try to do their best to get every penny back.
Natasha Clark, the LBC's political editor, reporting. I've just looked it up. She's got £120 million in the bank. He's got £300 million. That's £420 million between the two of them. Well, I suggest they write a cheque, don't you? We'll come back to that. Coming up after the news. Those geniuses at the BBC have done it again. Do you remember when in April alone on the BBC you could watch the Grand National, the Masters and the London Marathon and the boat race that you just heard there? Well, now that's down to one, as they manage to let the boat race get through their fingers. We'll have more on that after this. Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. 7.30 News, read by Thomas Watts.
Ministers have announced plans to permanently scrap refugees' rights to bring their families to the UK. There will also be a wait of longer than the current 5 years before they can apply for permanent resettlement. The Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood, says undercover footage from a police station in London is sickening. Officers based at Charing Cross are being investigated over allegations of racism, misogyny and the use of excessive force. Israeli authorities say they have safely stopped a number of boats from an aid flotilla trying to reach Gaza. The environmental campaigner Greta Thunberg was among the passengers detained. LBC weather, cloudy with spells of rain for many, drier in southeast England, a high of 20 degrees.
On the latest episode of The Newsagents.
We're going to be asking whether Tony Blair and Donald Trump are the right men to bring peace to Gaza. You can listen now by using our free Global Player app.
Get the latest episode of The Newsagents with Emily Maitlis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Planning your next train journey? Buy it on the South Western Railway app. It's the same ticket, but with a whole bunch of benefits. Pay no booking fees, get live departure updates, and see how busy your South Western Railway train is. Plus, you can book train tickets to anywhere in the UK.
Everything you need, all in your pocket. Get app and go. Download the SWR app today. Geographic exclusions apply. For full T's and C's, visit southwesternrailway.com/app.
At Specsavers, we've got hearing devices that can stream music or movies, and ones that are good in crowds. Rechargeable battery ones. Ones that are good at home. Ones that are good in the great outdoors. Ones that connect to phones. Ones that fit in your ear. Ones that fit over your ear. And ones that fit in wherever you happen to be. We've even got ones in our advanced range that use AI to make speech sound clearer. And they're all available at great Specsavers prices. Book a free hearing check today.
You know how fans shout at football matches?
Oh, wake up!
That's because sound is the most effective way to tell the players they're rubbish. Works in advertising too. Because when you amplify your advertising using radio, your campaign is 49% more likely to get noticed. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
7.36, a little behind the clock, so let's get straight to Christian May, Editor-in-Chief at City AM, and I imagine you and your colleagues at City AM celebrating a great exclusive. You revealed what's happening about the boat race. The BBC sunk again, Christian. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, that's right. Our excellent sports business desk dug out the news that the boat race, the iconic River Thames rowing race, is shifting from the BBC to Channel 4. And hats off to Channel 4, you know, they do sometimes do this. They sort of sweep in on what they call a great national treasure, and they say they want to bring a little bit of Channel 4 perspective to it. The BBC say that this was a financial decision, that, you know, it's a very expensive event to cover, and that they have just made a decision to move away from it.
Well, of course, Glastonbury just costs eight and sixpence, doesn't it? But do go on.
That's right. I mean, they've got to send some drones and choppers up to cover the boat race, and I know they send plenty of those to Glastonbury as well. And after our exclusive yesterday, lots of people started talking about this, of course, and there was a sense from some circles at the BBC, some senior figures at the BBC thought that the boat race was a bit stuffy and a bit elitist and not really where they should be. Now, the BBC have denied that and said, no, this was just a commercial decision and we wish it well on Channel 4. Channel 4, for their part, very excited, have said they're going to bring a fresh perspective to it. They're particularly keen to highlight the other other races that now take place alongside the classic Oxford-Cambridge showdown, and lots of races now from younger people and from state schools. Channel 4 quite keen to accentuate some of that. But they have said that they will completely respect the traditions of this this institution, which dates back to 1829.
Let's move on and talk about wind farms. What's the latest development with those, Christian?
I confess I'm trying to get my head around some of the intricacies of the energy market,
yes.
Which I have to say you could benefit from a PhD or two, figure out quite why it is. For example, we spend about £1 billion a year paying for wind turbines to effectively be turned off when it's too windy. We continue to pay for the people behind those wind farms, even though when it's too windy, we have to turn them off because we don't have enough infrastructure to transmit the energy that they have created. I feel I should pause there and let that one just sink in for a moment. We do not have the infrastructure to make the use of the energy or the electricity that could be created from wind farms when it's too windy. We've basically gone cart before horse. We are incredibly keen to get these wind farms up all over the country, onshore, offshore. It's an enormous part of this government and previous government's net zero objectives. That's fine. But we do not yet have enough infrastructure capacity to actually transport that. So we end up having to pay to turn them off. And this comes at a time when the net zero debate is going through one of its sort of periodic twists and turns. The Tory party of today said that they would scrap the net zero target, which I would remind listeners was brought in under the Conservatives. And indeed, ahead of the budget, business groups such as the British Chambers of Commerce have said to the government, you really need to get rid of the windfall taxes on North Sea oil and gas, because by your own admission, we need North Sea oil and gas for a long time. But you're making it exceptionally difficult and expensive, and people are leaving that those operations. And so we're going to be increasingly dependent on things like wind, which we do not yet have the capacity to make the most of.
Who's been caught in a tax trap?
Well, an awful lot of people. CGM, we've obtained some numbers from HMRC that looks at the number of people who are caught in what's called the 60p tax trap. And yeah, everybody, get your little violins out here. But this is for people whose salary falls between £100,000 and £125,000. Now, there are about 700,000 Brits now caught in that particular punitive trap, and the reason that it's a particular to that 100 to 125,000 range is because once you get into that, you are hit with effectively a 60% tax rate due to the tapering away of tax-free personal allowance, and indeed, if you have children, the removal of government-funded childcare support. So this is down to fiscal drag and wage growth, an increase in wages. We now know also there are about 500,000 people in London alone who fall into this capacity, and it's really tricky because actually it does deter people from taking a pay rise, and some people go down to 4 days a week. Some people don't want to go into that tax bracket, particularly if they have children and they're relying on some childcare arrangements that would be removed if HMRC clock you in that gap. So there are growing calls for the government to do something about this. I would be surprised if they expend their limited political capital on making life easier for those on six-figure salaries, but I think it would be the right thing to do if they did.
Grateful for that. Christian May, thank you. Editor-in-Chief at City AM, speak around the same time tomorrow. Stephen, coming to you as the next caller on the sentencing, the enormous number of years that were handed down to that Rochdale grooming gang. Dean says the reason their ethnicity is relevant is because of the cover-up. That's something that Maggie Oliver was trying to explain. I think some people just don't get it. This comes in with Kevin. I was disgusted at the grooming gang and their sentences were just and proper. I'm wondering now who will pay for the men to stay in prison. If they're Pakistani nationals, shouldn't they be repatriated under supervision? Well, A, I don't think Pakistan would take them. And B, of course, there's every likelihood they would not serve any time whatsoever unless they decided to move them into a Pakistani jail. So then they would effectively get away with it instead of serving 174 years, although one of them, of course, is still on the run. Stephen's in Aberdeen. You're on the radio, Stephen. What are you going to say to this? Good morning.
Hi there, Nick. I love the show. First-time caller.
Oh, thanks, buddy. But,
a lot of people are talking about this being like a race issue. It's not got anything to do with that. If there was white people that were committing these crimes, we can't make them stateless, so we put them in jail. When Maggie was talking, you know, about this yep. being, you know, less discussed in the political front for politicians trying to keep their chairs, that's the exact problem with politicians, and I feel like it's the exact reason why reform are doing so well, because you'll get people who are, you know, less Eaton type and more people like Aunt Middleton who have served in the services, relatable to, not that I've been in the SAS, but very relatable to, you know, the average day person.
Yep.
And has a sense of, well, a more aligned sense of right and wrong than the average politician does.
Well, let me, as you've been speaking with me, Stephen, this has dropped in from Sean in Suffolk. For years, the politicians have told us not to believe Nigel Farage. Now everything they've been saying has been proven true or being implemented. There is, I'm not saying everything Farage says is right, but there is something to what Sean's just said, isn't there, Stephen?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the politicians, they have a duty to have these difficult conversations. You probably have more difficult conversations on this radio station than the politicians do.
Yeah.
I feel like they just want to take an easy road, and just enough of an easy road to get to their next election and win. And it's not the right thing to do, and that's why there's so little political faith in the Labour or the Conservative parties.
Thoroughly enjoyed our first conversation. Hope it's one of many to come. Stephen, have yourself a good day. David, sorry I couldn't get you this side of the news. We'll try a little bit later. Be like Stephen, first time, first class. Get it off your chest. Get it on the radio. Give me a call on that number, 054. Not a clue. Haven't said it for 22 years. Not going to start now. Coming up after the news. Well, you remember that Shabana Mahmood said just a couple of days ago at the Labour Party conference,
until we can decide who comes in and who must leave, we will never be the generous country that I know we all believe in.
Now, the Prime Minister's gone to a summit of European leaders in Copenhagen talking about asylum rules and asylum practice. We'll hear from one of her colleagues, one of the Prime Minister's colleagues as well, about a new plan there. 7:45, LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
An overhaul of asylum rules will see refugees lose their right to bring their families to the UK. The head of the Metropolitan Police has described behaviour uncovered in secret filming at a police station as reprehensible. And Israeli authorities have intercepted at least 13 boats from an aid flotilla bound for Gaza. LBC weather, cloudy with spells of rain for many places, drier in the southeast, a high of 20 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays continue on the M25 anti-clockwise from junction 30 at the A13 to 28 at the A12. It was after an accident that happened earlier. And then also on the M25, there are delays clockwise from junction 2 at the A2 to 3 at the M20. And that's also after an accident. Long delays on the A40 eastbound. It's slow from before Northolt all the way to the Medway underpass. A coach has broken down and one lane is closed for recovery. On the trains, Thames Link services are delayed by about half an hour between St Pancras and Luton after an investigation earlier, but all the lines are back open. But the delays between Sevenoaks and Bickley have cleared, and on the underground there are severe delays on the District Line.
This is LBC.
Angela Rippon, what are you doing here?
I've come to tell you about using energy flexibly, Albert.
Flexibly?
Yes, smart meter owners could get rewarded for moving their energy use, like doing the laundry at off-peak times.
So I don't need to do the splits?
No, Albert. Nobody wants to see that.
Get rewarded for using energy flexibly, only with a smart meter. Search Get a Smart Meter today.
Eligibility and availability vary. Consumer action required. Reward schemes and tariffs available to selected customers from selected suppliers.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
One of the best things about a holiday with Saga is your chauffeur, who'll pick you up and drive you to your departure point. Whether you're cruising through Europe's iconic cities along the Danube, or enjoying a rainforest tour through Costa Rica. Even better, they'll pick you up and drive you home again afterwards. 2026 season now on sale. Search Saga Holidays. Experience is everything. Nationwide chauffeur service available on UK mainland. Full terms apply. Over 50s only.
It's right up here in the London Eye.
But imagine being inside. Perfect panoramic views of the capital from iconic pods.
Then get two Sun Superdays tickets to the London Eye. 34,000 available from £19 and thousands on the Sun for free.
Pick up the paper this Saturday to start collecting. Only in the Sun.
T's and C's apply. Even for seagulls.
For GCSE and A-level success, one name stands out. Justin Craig. Small, tailored group tuition that really works. Justin Cray courses consolidate knowledge, boost confidence and improve technique for mocks, assessments and exams. Available in classrooms and online. One-to-one also available. With over 40 years' experience, Justin Craig has helped more than 100,000 students. For more details, visit justincraig.ac.uk. Justin Craig, tailored for you.
When BP asked me to read the voiceover for their new Wild Bean Cafe ad, I thought I knew what to expect. But when they told me I'd be reading the script next to a mountain waterfall, on horseback, strumming a harp, in a hailstorm, naked, ow, 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 ow. Well, that was wildly unexpected. Just like Wild Bean Cafe having a freshly ground signature espresso blend for everything from Americanos to flat whites in a fuel station. Wowzers. Wild Bean Cafe. Only at BP. Subject to availability at selected BP stores only.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Just coming up on 11 minutes before 8, we'll come back to our conversation concerning the sentence of that so-called Rochdale grooming gang in a moment. But when we went through the newspapers, I told you that on the front page is one headline, automatic rights for refugees to be scrapped. And this is ahead of the Prime Minister arriving in Copenhagen for a summit of European leaders, a policy that we're going to hear more of now from the relevant minister, Minister for Migration and Citizenship and Labour MP Mike Tapp, who joins me now. Can you give us some... Good morning, Minister. Can you give us a little bit more detail on this, then? Morning to you.
Good morning, Nick. Yeah, so what we're doing here, we've inherited a broken immigration system from open borders to processing to unfairness. And what we see across Europe is migrants essentially asylum shopping, and they're looking for that soft touch and that best deal. So what these changes do, and I'll go into that in one moment, is it brings us level with the rest of Europe. So we've got that level playing field, and that will reduce one of those pull factors. Now, there's more to come on this from the Home Secretary in the next few weeks. But what the Keir Starmer, the Prime Minister, is saying today is there's two elements to this which are really important. Firstly, if you come and you're granted asylum, that's not an automatic ticket for the rest of family to come over. So that will be assessed on individual merit. But also, really importantly, you're not automatically granted settlement. So you have to earn that right to settle in this country. And the reason we're doing that is because, of course, we see the world change. Wars end, governments change, and someone who may have been unsafe at one point might not be in the future. So they have to earn that settlement in the UK, just like you do if you're here.
And how is that to be earned? That's twice you've used the word earn. Mm-hmm. How is it to be earned, Minister?
So more detail on this will be laid out by the Home Secretary in the next few weeks, but I very much imagine it will be very much in line with ILR settlement routes. So we're looking at contributions. So are you working? Are you perhaps active in the community?
So this is something that was floated last week, the idea that you might be a community worker or something of that aspect. Is that roughly what we're talking about?
Roughly that'll be it, yeah. So you're having to earn your right to be here. And look, all that does is it brings us in line with Europe so that we're not seen as that soft touch. It's a fair system, but it's also firm, and that's what we stand for as a government.
But we've all just finished making merry by the Mersey. Why didn't we hear more from the Home Secretary or the Prime Minister? A little more over the last few days, Minister.
Making merry by the Mersey. I mean, I was drinking coffee, Nick, for the whole conference.
I don't believe... You must have had one half a lager. Come
no,
on, Mike.
No comment. That's a stat I won't be able to provide you with.
No, OK.
Look... there's obviously a lot going on at conference, and not everything can be said there, but we saw some fantastic speeches. And I think the message that came from conference from Keir Starmer, the Prime Minister, was fantastic, that we love the country, we are true patriots, but we do that within our British values and our Labour values, which is strength and decency, fairness and firmness at the same time. We're not here to see division in communities like we see from the likes of Nigel Farage.
All right. So someone who arrives here, will they have to wait a period of time before their family can join them, or their family will never be able to join them? What's the thinking there?
Well, this is where it depends, and this is where each application will be assessed on its merit. So what we're saying at this point is that there won't be an automatic right. So it's not a golden ticket to bring your family over. And I know that that's one of the pull factors, along with illegal employment, which, by the way, we're dealing with. I think I was on here talking about that a few weeks ago with increased raids and digital ID, etc. But a lot of people that you speak to who are coming over on boats, for example, are doing it to bring their family over as well. And we're not saying that, you know, if you're a genuine refugee and that your family do need that refuge too, we're not saying that it's automatically a no, but we're not saying, well, we are saying, it's not automatically a yes.
All right. You've mentioned Nigel Farage. There's been a certain amount of doubt over the Prime Minister's language at the weekend that he's following racist policies, but the person who follows isn't racist. Can you clarify, as you see that situation, surely if someone supports a racist policy, it indicates they're racist, Minister?
Look, my view on this is we have freedom of speech in this country, which doesn't mean that we have to tolerate intolerance. And we've reached a line now, and we're seeing from Nigel Farage division and hate, and that's what he wants. He doesn't want us to solve the small boat problem, for example. So we're saying that's not what we stand for. It's about unifying the country, not pitching neighbour against neighbour.
But my question was, if you follow a racist policy, does that make you racist yourself, Minister?
Well, look, it's up. My view on this is that if you're pitching neighbour against neighbour and seeding division, then that could be seen as racist. And I don't particularly have a problem with that. That's freedom of speech. And look, if we believe that, or if someone believes that, there's nothing wrong with saying it in the same way that Nigel Farage can say what he wants. So this snowflakery that we're seeing from Farage and Zia Youssef around our language, I find quite confusing, to be quite honest.
Right, so you not necessarily racist to follow a racist policy. I'm just trying to clarify that, the way we are.
Look, what we've got to be really clear is...
Can you just say yes or no?
What, is it racist to follow a racist policy? Not necessarily.
Right.
But it would be racist to implement a racist policy. So it's not racist to vote Reform, for example.
Right.
Because people vote for lots of different reasons. And it's not racist to necessarily support...
Okay. In a related conversation, how is the one-in, one-out deal going currently?
As it stands, as you know, Nick, it's a pilot scheme because this is very complex. We know the Conservatives wanted this. They were begging the French for it. We've started to deliver it.
But what are the numbers currently? How many have gone out and how many have come in?
We've deported seven, and we've had three in. But this is ramping up over the next week or so, and you're going to have more.
This was, I was told by the then Home Secretary, Yvette Cooper, this was going to be, quote, a game changer. We've now been running it for, what, is it 3 weeks? And you've got seven people you've sent back. Are you seriously saying that this is even worth sticking with?
It's a pilot scheme, Nick. And what we've made really clear is that it will start slow and speed up. And you'll see it ramping up over the next few weeks. And what it does is it starts to seed that doubt if you're sat in Calais around spending that 10 grand to cross, because you could go back almost immediately. It's like any business model. If you're running a car business, for example, and one in 15 of your cars that you sell is dodgy, then that business model starts to break down. And as the pilot scheme grows, it will turn from one in 15 to two to three to four to five. And then it seeds more doubt. But this is only one part of what we're doing. You know, we've increased deportations. We've got more returns agreements. We're looking at the ECHR.
You also got more arrivals, of course.
We're moving people out of, or looking to move people out of hotels into MOD sites. And, of course, we're levelling the playing field across Europe. Right. So there's a lot of work going on, Nick.
Finally, I appreciate it's not exactly your brief, but I do need a word from you as you work in the Home Office. The appalling documentary that's broadcast last night on the Panorama show about what is clearly racist, misogynistic and even violent behaviour and attitudes at a police station in central London. Minister?
Yeah, it's disgraceful that what I saw on Panorama, and it's right that it's gone to the IOPC for that independent investigation, who I'm sure will be thorough in that. It's also right that those who are identified have been suspended already. I love our police force. I've worked for the National Crime Agency. My dad is a retired copper, but we cannot allow this sort of abuse and disgusting behaviour to happen. We need to increase that vetting standards, which is what we're looking at doing. And I know what makes a good copper. It's a mix between empathy and resilience. You can't just have one of those, and we've got to make sure that's what we're delivering. And this is very disturbing reports, but we're working hard to improve. And obviously, Sir Mark Rowley has said similar.
Mike Tapp, Minister for Migration and Citizenship, spelling out how automatic rights of refugees will be scrapped. More work being done on that through the autumn. Thank you for your input, Minister. Just to remind listeners, the Commissioner of the Met is going to be with us in about 5-6 minutes' time, shortly after the 8 o'clock news. It's 3 minutes before 8. Now, George is in Bristol to come back to this conversation concerning grooming gangs. You're on the radio. Good morning, George. Your reaction to what you're hearing so far?
How you doing, Nick? Good morning, mate. Mate, I'm pretty much exactly on board with you. I've got one question I want to ask you. My blood is absolutely boiling. I'm trying to stay calm, and I will stay calm because I'm on the radio and I don't want to end up in prison for 15 years for offending anyone.
Right, but okay.
The question is, this country, we're in such a divisive, country at the moment. Everyone's either the left or the right or the middle, or you support him or her or Joe Bloggs. Surely this is a subject everyone in the world, not in the country, can agree on? Why are people moaning about the sentencing that they got? Or why are people saying, oh, they're from Pakistan, or they're from English, or white men get this and they get that? Surely this is a subject that everyone can agree on. And you've had a couple of callers...
Because, George, it's an inconvenient truth. And while it doesn't matter, really, that some callers... And I understand their position, but I personally think they're wrong. That doesn't matter that much. Sadly, that's the same sentiment that informs police authorities and social services not to do anything when they're told by a 13-year-old girl she's a victim of rape.
I'm literally shaking. Like, these girls, whether you've raped a girl or you've raped a boy or you've raped a black man or you've raped a white man, they have been raped, yep. And I don't care if you're from Pakistan or if you're from Australia, the sentencing is the sentencing, and I just can't see why everyone's got to find fault in something and why they got moan and they're whinging or they got to look out for people because of this and that. They've been raped. I don't care how much it costs to keep them in prison. We waste money on everything. So, for me, if we got to spend millions keeping them in prison, keep them there. I don't care. They should be in prison. They'll be out in 10 minutes, and they'll do it again.
I hear what you say, and in many instances you're right, they won't in this instance, because a total of 174 years, admittedly you have to take something of that because one of the people isn't, so that's 150 years between those we have got behind bars. Well, you're going to be looking at 60 to 70 years between all of them and their lives ruined and looking over their shoulders. And, George, I think you and I celebrate that. Thanks for your kind words about the show. The music means we must move on. And joining us very shortly, Commissioner of the Metropolitan Police, Sir Mark Rowley, after that documentary.
I understand the people of London are going to be really upset by this. Some it will cause to question the trust they hold the police in. And we depend on that trust so much, without it we can't succeed in keeping them safe.
Plus also in the next hour, how middle-class shoplifters thieve for thrills, and a shocking story about a mother whose son took his own life at the troubled Blackpool Victoria Hospital. We'll hear more from her after this. 8 o'clock news on LBC is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, London's Mayor Sir Sadiq Khan says he is disgusted and appalled by behaviour uncovered at a police station in the capital. Officers based at Charing Cross are being investigated over allegations of racism, misogyny and the use of excessive force. LBC's Fraser Knight has more details.
The undercover filming captured officers sharing alleged extreme racist views, sexist comments, and boasting about their use of force against detainees, including a teenager with autism. And the revelations have now led to a lengthy apology from the commissioner, who said it would cause some to question if their sons and daughters would be safe in our cells. The independent police watchdog is investigating 11 people in the station here who've since been suspended. Fraser Knight, LBC, at Charing Cross.
The Commissioner, Sir Mark Rowley, will be speaking to Nick after the news. Sir Keir Starmer is to discuss plans to reform the asylum system at a meeting of European leaders in Denmark. They include changing the requirements for long-term settlement and ending refugees' automatic right to bring their families to the UK. New applications for the family reunion route were suspended last month. The Migration Minister, Mike Tapp, has told Nick that migrants are asylum shopping across Europe.
They're looking for that soft touch and that best deal. So what these changes do is it brings us level with the rest of Europe. So we've got that level playing field, and that will reduce one of those pull factors.
Israeli authorities have intercepted at least 13 boats from an aid flotilla heading for Gaza. Greta Thunberg was among the passengers taken to a port in Israel, but organisers say dozens of boats are still en route. A future Conservative government would scrap Britain's landmark climate legislation. The Tory leader, Kemi Badenoch, says she'd replace the Climate Change Act with a strategy for cheap and reliable power. And Manchester City drew 2-2 with Monaco in the Champions League after conceding a penalty in the 90th minute last night. Arsenal beat Olympiacos 2-0 at the Emirates, and Newcastle thrashed Union Saint-Gilloise 4-0 in Birmingham. In Belgium, rather. In the city, the FTSE 100 is reopening at 94.46 after closing up 96 yesterday. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.14. LBC weather, foggy to start, then cloudy with rain for many. Drier in the southeast. A high of 20 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Welcome our new bookworms to the club. Now, do you read traditional books or e-books?
Oh, real books.
Traditional, always.
Yes, quite.
I read e-books. Yes. I adjust it so the font's huge.
Ooh, they make large font books.
Think bigger. Imagine Moby Dick all cuddled up with a book. His font size.
Oh, my goodness. Oh.
Maybe it's time for varifocals. At Specsavers, get 2-for-1 varifocal glasses from £110. Conditions and exclusions apply. See online for details.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. It's 8:03 on Thursday, October the 2nd. In the words of the boss, the commissioner, it's reprehensible and completely unacceptable behaviour seen on the television last night. You will hear from Sir Mark Rowley as to what he and his colleagues try to do to root out what is clearly racist, misogynistic and even violence taking place in one of London's biggest police. I do apologise. I haven't already told you I'm not particularly well today. But we will battle on because frailty is not indulged. Someone else who's battling on, but hopefully it might be payback time, is Michelle Moan, Baroness Moan. Here she is speaking in 2023.
Hindsight's a wonderful thing. I wasn't trying to pull the wool over anyone's eyes. I can't see what we've done wrong.
Utter nonsense. Now she's been told to repay £122 million. Surely we should try and strip her of her title. Plus the middle-class shoplifters who do it for thrills and to lift the mood, and God knows we need it. Later in the show you'll be hearing from...
Well, we'll just tell your mother that, we ate it all.
That's Eugene Levy starring as Mr. Levenstein in American Pie. Also, of course, from...
We loaned her $50,000!
We gave her $50,000, and you spent more than that on wigs that year.
Johnny Rose in Schitt's Creek. They say you should never meet your heroes. I'll give it a try in the next hour.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
It was truly horrific watching that show last night, wasn't it? Although bizarrely, and I know I'm not the only one, so thank you that those of you at Sim, with about 10 minutes to go, the tape, it's not on a tape, it suddenly stopped. And we got an advert for Radio 3, so I don't know what we missed, what bits we missed. But here's a little of the footage captured by the BBC reporter working for Panorama. Behaviour of officers at Charing Cross Police Station.
The smiles are scum. Smiles are ugly.
I've seen too many Islamists committing crimes. Their way of life is not the correct way of life.
I love taking fingerprints by force, because I'm like, give me your fingerprints. No, I'm going to break your fingers if you don't give it to me. I said, well, you grab the other two fingers and you pull really hard and it snaps the tendon.
I saw a little dig in the back of the leg.
Don't talk us all into a big complaint.
I'm still learning.
You heard one officer describe Somalians as scum. He's seen too many Islamics, his word, committing crimes. Another officer bragging about the use of force. A sergeant telling undercover reporter not to talk to fellow officers about a complaint. And items we couldn't broadcast about sexual behaviour as well. The reporter, by the way, Rory Bibb. Joining me now, Commissioner of the Metropolitan Police, Sir Mark Rowley. Commissioner, thank you for coming on. When were you first made aware of the contents of this programme? Good morning.
So, about a couple of weeks ago, we got a letter from Panorama, 13-page letter laying out some of the quotes, which, to be fair to Panorama, was a fairly good summary of what we saw last night. And I saw it, like you, for the first time last night. It's ghastly, it's reprehensible. Clearly there's racism in there, there's misogyny, there's relishing in using excess force. It's completely unacceptable, and I'm sure members of the public watching it will be upset and angry, as we are.
Upon receipt of that letter, Commissioner, what actions did you take?
So within a couple of days, 10 people have been suspended and 2 restricted. We called in the Independent Officer of Police Complaints to ask them to pick up the investigation, which they have done. And we've been pressing the BBC for the footage, which they wouldn't give us before last night. And that, I would hope now the investigation can accelerate to a rapid conclusion, because there's some pretty incontrovertible evidence against some of the officers on that.
Will you be requesting what are called the rushes, Commissioner? That is all the tape that would have been shot.
Yeah, at the start we were requesting that. Now it's the IPC investigation. They're requesting that. We've been pressing the BBC to help them as quickly as possible. But frankly, some of the content from last night on its own, in my mind, would be enough to move officers to a fast-track misconduct hearing. It's clearly disgraceful. We've been relentless in terms of dealing with these issues for the 3 years I've been commissioner. We've spoken about it several times, Nick. We've already removed nearly 1,500 officers and staff from the Met. It's the biggest counter-corruption clear-out in history. I've got tens of thousands of fabulous people who care deeply about the public, and they are... it's not about us. It's about the public and their reaction. But my colleagues are as angry and upset with this as they are. It's them who've been stepping forward and reporting misconduct. And so this is the biggest clear-out in history. We're a long way through it, but there's still much more to do, as last night shows.
Commissioner, you're right to say, and there are very brave men and women putting on uniforms today, or indeed working out of uniforms, 33,000, I think, in your force, about 147,000 men and women across the whole of England and Wales, a terrific body. But it has to be said that in some instances, racists are attracted to a role in the police. Why is that, Commissioner?
I think there's a danger, isn't there, that people with corrupt motives can be attracted to power. We've seen it in sexual abuse cases. People are attracted to be teachers or caretakers or whatever. People can be attracted to power. One of the things that I've had to do, we've really toughened our vetting standards on entry. So we've doubled the proportion of people failing on entry. It used to be 5%. Now 10% of people who pass all the entry requirements, we then fail on vetting because we're ruthless at that front door point. And that's critical to be as sharp as we can do there, and we're constantly looking for new ways to get under people's history. And then when they're in the organisation, it's about the culture we create and about being determined in terms of removing people. What this programme shows, I think, and there's some elements in it which show, here's a group of people, they were afraid of our professional standards departments, that came out of one of the conversations, they were having some of these conversations in private. As the PBC themselves show, it shows to some degree that the determined effort of the last two or three years has driven some cliques and networks underground, and we're going after them. We're going to be using top AI technology, intelligence tools to identify them, counter-terrorism, policing, surveillance, and sort of those sort of tactics against them. Even though we've got three times as many officers stepping forward to report cases, we're going to put even more support around whistleblowers to draw even more of that out. We're determined, we will keep going until we get rid of all these problems.
How will AI be deployed, Commissioner?
So, like any big organisation, we have lots of data about our people. It's in different systems. It's in HR systems. It's in their work phones. It's in all over the place. If you can pull all that data together, there's really powerful things you can do to spot patterns of misbehaviour, toxic teams, corruption. And the more we can use that, that will help. On top of the reports we get from people, on top of our investigative tactics using covert surveillance and other tactics.
And these will be some of your counter-terror operatives will be
exactly
monitored.
Yeah, exactly.
We can't go much higher than that, Commissioner.
No, and we've got in our sort of anti-corruption command, many of the SIOs, the senior investigating officers in our counter-corruption command, have got organised crime and counter-terrorism experience, and we will keep going until it's gone. I believe the progress we've made so far, this nearly 1,500 who've gone, I've got rid of a lot of noise out of the system. I've cleared out a lot of the legacy of people who should have been thrown out some time ago. And now we're digging deeper into those tumours that are buried in the organisation that need finding and digging out.
I've known you, excuse me, I've known you for years, and I've interviewed you more times than I can remember, and I know you're totally committed on this, but I know also, Commissioner, you've had enormous frustration in the past that you've had blokes and women working for you who you want out, and you've not been able to get them out. I would imagine you want some of those coppers we saw last night out yesterday. What is the reality? How long will it take before they're relieved of their duties?
So, if we could do that in weeks, sort of a few weeks, that would be as fast as is possible.
That's your goal, is it, Commissioner?
That's my goal. I'm dependent upon the IOPC. We can only go to fast processes if the evidence is incontrovertible, is the word in police regulations. But frankly, for many of those people last night, the evidence looks to me incontrovertible. You don't need to be a lawyer or a sort of police officer to see that. That's what I'd like to do. But, I mean, the thing that frustrates me about our very rule-bound system. If Nick, you or I were chief exec of, I know, John Lewis,
yep,
and we had video of our staff room of people talking like that, they'd be gone the next day. I have a regulatory framework, and the IOPC, the Independent Office of Police Complaints, do as well, which means that's going to take us a few weeks to work through, but we're determined to move as quickly as possible. Most important for the public, they're suspended, they're off duty, they don't have any public contact.
But they're still being paid, Commissioner.
Exactly, I was about to say, but I want them off the payroll as quickly as possible, just like the point you were going to make.
Now, following the publication of the Casey report in 2023, You refuse to describe the force as institutionally misogynistic, racist and homophobic. Are you ready to change your mind?
The institution of the Met is bearing down on all these problems at the moment, and that's what hence the results and things I said to you there. The most important thing is I recognise, and I've been really clear, that there are deep systemic issues that go back over decades, that not just failures in regulations, failures in leadership, failures in culture, failures in vetting, a whole pattern of things that have created a too comfortable environment that has created the volume of problem that we've been rooting out. But we're showing as an organisation how determined we are. And the fact I've got 1,400 men and women who've stepped forward in recent years to report their colleagues shows how collectively determined we are to deal with this. Frankly, the words I use aren't that important. Different commissioners have used different words. Some have used the institutional racism phrase, some haven't. That's not what's going to change things. It's the action, it's the hard, sharp action we're taking that is making progress. But as I say, I'm not any illusion there's more to do.
Okay, you're not going to say you're institutionally racist, homophobic, misogynist. You're not prepared to say that?
No.
Okay. I hear you're bearing down. You use the word relentless. Why did it take a BBC reporter, then, to discover what was going on at Charing Cross?
We're grateful for the BBC for doing that piece of work. The vast majority...
But if you're bearing down and you're relentless, the level of that abuse, Sir Mark, was extraordinary. I can't say some of it on the radio because I'd lose my job. Why did it take a BBC bloke to find it?
It's horrific, and what I see is the vast majority of those people we've removed from the organisation is on the shoulders of good men and women who've reported those cases to us. So there's a confidence in the organisation usually to report things. But of course, we can all understand sometimes colleagues are nervous about reporting, particularly when you've got a situation like that where sergeants were behaving sort of completely atrociously. And so we're grateful the BBC found this. We'd wish we'd found it ourselves, but it's good that they found it.
I mean, I don't know where you were serving, noting that you've been a former chief constable and other jobs. Whether you were serving in 2003, you might recall the documentary Secret Policeman, GMP, Greater Manchester Police. It might be a memory. Nothing's moved on, has it, with policing generally? Not the Met, policing generally, Commissioner?
I was a chief superintendent in Surrey then, just to answer the first part of your question. Policing's moved on, but the expectations moved on as well, and we haven't been ruthless enough over many, many years at dealing with those who corrupt our integrity. Our professional standards world has focused very much on corruption in terms of money and the sort of classic old-fashioned corruption. It hasn't focused enough on those who corrupt our integrity because they're racist, because they're misogynist, and sort of things we saw last night. We're turning all of our specialist tactics onto those people, which is why we're getting rid of them, and we will keep going on it in the way I said.
I mean, my listeners might be concerned if counter-terror officers are being used. We've got enough blokes and women, have we, to do their brief as well as this?
It's people with that experience. We've got a full counter-terrorism capability dealing with all the threats they're wrestling with. But it's about the skills you want to put to something, and it's about how important you value it. If we're going to get... you saw some of the conversations last night, people talking about, can I trust this person?
Yeah.
Are they from professional standards? If we're going to get underneath that, that's like an organised crime group sort of working out who can I trust and how am I going to operate. If we're going to dive into the organisation, as we are, we've got tens of covert operations already running. If we're going to do that, that requires people with the investigative skills to be able to root that out, and that's our approach.
Last minute together. Were you provided with a full copy of the documentary? Because mine, there was a glitch with about 5 minutes to go. I don't know whether you experienced that as well, Commissioner.
I was watching it on iPlayer, and I said, I managed to get...
You saw the whole thing.
It was on iPlayer from about 6 p.m. I managed to get through it.
Okay.
So Londoners can be assured, so we get the fact that...
Yes, what's your... A couple of last questions, but what do you want to say? There will be people waking up who either live in London or work in London, or they have loved ones working in London who are minority, mixed race, or they might be female for that matter. What do you want to say to them, Commissioner?
We completely get that you're going to be upset and angry when you watch this, and it's going to cause you to question your trust in the Metropolitan Police. You can be rest assured that we are relentless at rooting out these characters. You can trust the vast majority of great men and women who are out there to protect you and serve. It's those men and women who are building more trust and more confidence from the people of London, and we will continue doing that because we're all equally passionate about our vocation, and we're all as horrified as you are as a member of the public by what we saw last night.
Final question, and this is coming from some listeners. Are you fully supportive of undercover reporting like this? And also, in some instances, it would appear that the journalist was feeding some of your soon-to-be former officers beer?
If you're a journalist, Nick, you would say that's justified in the public interest. I'm not going to criticise a journalist. And I would also say it's upsetting to watch that programme last night, but I'm not going to pass that anger on to Panorama. And to be fair to the journalist, he was very balanced. Seeing him interviewed on that programme last night, he was saying, look, I've seen lots of fantastic police officers. I've seen lots of police officers who care, but there are small groups, and he talks about, because the Met's been so tough on these issues, it's going underground.
Yes.
I thought it was a fair account of his experiences in his 6 months with us at the back end of last year. So, it's annoying, it's frustrating, but it's indicative of the issues we're wrestling with, and Londoners can be rest assured that we're going to determinedly follow through on it.
Yeah, it's worth saying we saw officers working with some people in the most challenging circumstances, putting in a fully professional job. I'm grateful for your extended time this morning. Thank you, Sir Mark Rowley, Commissioner of the Metro and Police, responding to that documentary. A little behind the clock now, 18 minutes after eight. Let's get straight to the LBC news headlines, read by Thomas Watts.
The Metropolitan Police Commissioner, Sir Mark Rowley, has told Nick that undercover footage from a station in London is ghastly and reprehensible. A Home Office minister has told LBC that migrants are asylum shopping to look for soft-touch countries in Europe. And Israeli authorities say they've safely stopped a number of boats from an aid flotilla trying to reach Gaza. LBC weather, foggy this morning, then cloudy with rain for many, a high of 20 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays on the M25 clockwise from junction 14 at Heathrow to 17 at Maple Cross. It was after an accident that happened earlier. All the lanes are back open now, but it's still very slow. Also delays on the M25 clockwise from junction 2 at the A2 to 3 at the M20. And that was after an accident that happened earlier. Very busy on the A1 southbound in Boreham Wood. That's because of an accident. On the trains, well, these delays do continue for Thameslink. They're delayed by about half an hour between St Pancras and Luton after an investigation, and Chiltern Railway still suffering with some minor delays between Rickmansworth and Aylesbury Vale Parkway. And on the underground, there are still severe delays on the District Line.
LBC.
Hey, it's me, your dishwasher. I'm sorry about the chaos last night. I think a fork got jammed in my racks. Whoops. Don't even check the bills. I've overdone it. Don't get mad, okay, but I used up lots of power yesterday. Sometimes you just have to blow off some steam.
It can feel like all your energy does is take, take, take. But the longer you're with OVO, the more rewards you get. OVO, do energy differently. Beyond customers only, eligibility required, redemption limits apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060973. This is LBC.
Welcome on board this LNER service from London King's Cross to Edinburgh. My name's Paul, your train manager today, and hang on. Is that a Scrabble tournament in coach here? Yes. G with an X is a word. Right, we're cruising at 125 miles per hour. Same speed this lad next to me is typing. Someone's on a roll. The cafe bar's in coach G if you fancy a brew. Or if you're mid-box set binge, just order through the QR code at your seat. We'll deliver it. So sit back and enjoy your journey. With LNER, it's freedom all the way.
Amazon offers term time working to their employees. Like Anton, who's home to look after his daughters during their holidays.
Hello!
To him, this is the best sound in the world. Actually, maybe that's the best sound of all. Now that's term time working. Offered at Amazon. 10 weeks off guaranteed per year. Mix of paid holiday and unpaid time off. Conditions apply.
It's great up here in the London Eye.
But imagine being inside. Perfect panoramic views of the capital from iconic pods.
Then get two Sun Super Day stickers for the London Eye. 34,000 available from £19 and thousands on the Sun for free.
Pick up the paper this Saturday to start collecting. Only in the Sun.
T's and C's apply. Even for seagulls.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
8:21. Let's get straight to your calls concerning that that documentary last night. It was an absolute, it's an old expression, but it was an absolute bombshell. Julian's in Richmond. Julian, what can you tell me? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick.
Hello, sir.
Yes, I watched it last night, and one thing that came out was the main sergeant, you know, with the sexual tendencies. Yeah, he said he'd been in the job for 25 years. Now, I don't know, so that takes me back to, say, 2000, but I grew up living in Soho in the early 80s.
Okay.
And I can tell you now that station, Charing Cross, was known locally as a bit of a bad apple, heavy-handedness. And later, now, I don't know this as a fact, but I do know there was tensions between Charing Cross and West End Central Police Station.
Right.
And at one point, it was said that two people were found to be gay in West End Central.
Sorry, just slow down. The officers were gay, is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I was told, now I don't know this, Nick, but I was told, you know, by a few locals who are a little bit more sort of like closer to this, that there was a lot of homophobic abuse going on between the two stations.
Right,
so,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think this is systemic. I if you think it, you know, it's a thing that's gone on for the last 10 years now, I think this station has had issues for many, many years.
Clearly it has. When I asked the commissioner, while of course not all police officers are racist, and I wouldn't suggest it, why is it that racists are attracted to the job? He talked about the possibility, or the opportunity, I should say, the opportunity for corrupt behaviour to operate and behave in a corrupt fashion. Was that a fair comment?
Partially. I don't think you can... Listen, it's not everyone. I think in that programme, I think it didn't really show you, but I think you find there was a lot of officers in that station who knew what was going on and didn't agree with it. But, yeah, no, this has been going on for ages at that station, Nick.
Final question. Do you think the Met is institutionally racist?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right. Julian, thanks for taking us back in time. Your recollections from living there. We'll have more calls on that in just a moment, but we're trying to, behind the clock, I'm just trying to catch up because there is one other story I want to give you in this section of the show, which is a judge criticising three Algerian illegal migrants for abusing Britain's kindness after they stole £4,000 worth of gadgets from city workers. Adam Zawi, who claimed to be 21, living in a three-star hotel at our expense, when he and his gang swiped two rucksacks from a pub and a bar in London's financial district. The gang, which included fellow illegal migrants Usama Fadaj, who's 35, and Ayoji Abdarouf, who's 29, stole belongings from customers at the Walrus and the Carpenter and the Old Wine Shades. The goods they took included Air Plus 2 tablets, Sony headphones, and a £1,300 laptop. Right, as I said, Judge Michael Snow, this is an appalling situation. I'm dealing with a situation where all the defendants have no right to live in this country. They claim they need protection to live in this country and then return that by stealing from citizens of this country. They took advantage of people who were distracted because they were socialising. There are no mitigating facts here. Mr. Zawi must think I was born yesterday if he thinks I believe he's 21. He's older than that. Well said. We like Judge Michael Snow, don't we? Now, let's bring to the conversation David Chipley. David is an investigative journalist who focuses on crime, justice, writes regularly for titles such as The Daily Mail, Spectator and The Telegraph. And you may recall, last month, he and The Telegraph did a considerable amount of work. They looked at records around more than 200 people living in asylum seeker hotels and the level of crime with which they've been involved. David Chipley joins me now. Good to have you on, David. Your reaction to the stance taken by this particular judge. Good morning.
Good morning. I should say it was Janet Easton's investigation that actually pulled that information out of my mind. I did comment on it.
Okay.
I think it's really refreshing, though, to hear a judge being this blunt and honest. And, you know, I think we probably all wish judges were a bit more like this in these cases. What this reveals, though, obviously, is the huge problem we've got with our asylum system and how it's being abused. Because we are so trusting and so accepting, you know, these men can come over, be housed at our expense while running a criminal enterprise. And that is, you know, bizarre behaviour.
It might not fall to an investigative journalist to solve it. Politicians are trying and failing. But have you got any ideas as to what a solution might be? Because you're right, we celebrate British tolerance. I think that's one of the great parts of living in this country, and I wouldn't want to lose it. But I don't want to be taken for a mug either. David?
Well, yeah, I think part of the issue we've got is that other European countries are becoming a bit more pragmatic about this. So they are deporting more people when they don't find their asylum claims convincing. They are even deporting back to places like Afghanistan because they put agreements in place with the new Taliban government there. And because we aren't, whereas, you know, Germany, France, Austria are seeing asylum claims dropping, ours are continuing to rise because migrants have realised we are the best bet in lots of ways. So I think we have to, you know, catch up with other European countries, start to be more realistic and really look at the whole refugee convention because that was developed just after World War II for a very different world, where, of course, there were these huge movements of people who were displaced across Europe, and it was right then. Now, that same legal framework is being used essentially to facilitate mass movement of people from all over the world, often from countries which aren't necessarily war-torn, they're just less pleasant or less rich than Britain. And we can't possibly have a model where, you know, a billion or more people could potentially have a legal right to come here.
Lastly, where do you see this dialogue going, either the journalistic work that you're doing or the political work, the politicians, where do you see it going over the next 6 to 12 months?
Well, I think the big thing we need is more data. The Home Office and the police don't capture data on migration status of people caught doing crime. So we get some stats reported. The Telegraph did a great piece of work showing hundreds of offences by asylum seekers living in hotels. We need proper data so we can have a really honest conversation about this.
Grateful for your time. David Shipley, thank you. Let's give credit again to Janet Eason, who worked on that Daily Telegraph piece. David, you're an investigative journalist to be found in titles such as The Daily Mail, Telegraph and The Spectator, 8:28. We might take calls on that, but we are talking about that shocking documentary that was broadcast last night on the BBC. Give them credit. Great work by the Panorama team there. Mary's in Bromley, in Met Land. What do you make of this, Mary? Good morning.
Hello, hi. I didn't expect you to come to me so soon.
I don't hang around with people from Bromley.
I was just making the point that I think unfortunately, when you work for an organisation, even if it's just one bad apple, there is an institutional problem. I think it's all good and well to deny it, but unfortunately, it is what it is.
So what you're saying is, to be institutionally racist, it's effectively woven into the very fabric of the organisation. And while I would concede they've got an almost...
It's a culture.
But I don't buy it, Mary. I don't think they're institutionally racist. I think they've got an enormous problem, but I don't think that they are institutionally racist. I really
don't. You
don't
think?
No.
So that's a subjective opinion.
Yeah.
But what I'm trying to put across to you is, for instance, if you hold those views yourself, mm-hmm. and you work for an organisation, you are representing that organisation, mm-hmm. and you are part of that institution. You are part of that mindset. You are part of that practice. You are part of that culture. You need to take responsibility. You need to take responsibility, and you need to admit there is a problem.
I agree.
You cannot say, this action or behaviour is a problem. So you label the whole thing. You don't label parts of it, you label the whole thing.
I don't...
You don't have to apologise.
No, well, all right, okay. Mary, 33,000 officers, and I don't know how many thousand civilian staff... They cannot all be tarred with the brush of those ghastly...
You said
the Met is institutionally racist.
It's a culture, and it seeps through, and it's a mindset.
Mary, if you agree with the idea the Met is institutionally racist, you're saying those 33,000 men and women, plus civilian staff, I don't even... are all racist and not having it. I don't...
No. There's a nuance here. I'm saying... For instance,
but if you're saying institutionally racist, you're saying...
It's a practice. Everything we do, everything that's done in an institution like the NHS, or, for instance, like the Met Police, it's a practice. You practice, and you practice alongside your colleagues. Mm. And so because of that, it is an institution, and the people that work in the institution, whether it's a group of people in that institution, they... form that institution. It's a culture. They take out and they serve people.
All right.
That was one point.
All right. I'm sorry, Mary. I haven't got time for another point because we're already late. Mary, have a good day. Thank you. Let's see what others make of your strong assertions. Also after the news.
A mum from Lancashire whose son took his own life in a hospital toilet says she is scared at the prospect of ever having to go there herself. I'm LBC's Chris Chambers with the story.
It's 8:31, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, here on LBC News Time then. Thomas Watts.
The head of the Metropolitan Police has told Nick that secret filming at a police station in London could lead to dismissals in weeks. Sir Mark Rowley says it shows incontrovertible evidence of racism, misogyny and officers relishing in using excessive force. A Home Office minister's told LBC that migrants are asylum shopping to look for soft touch countries in Europe. There are plans to permanently end refugees' automatic rights
right to bring their families to Britain. Israeli authorities have intercepted at least 13 boats from a Gaza-bound aid flotilla. Environmental campaigner Greta Thunberg was among the passengers arrested and taken to the port of Ashdod. LBC weather, foggy to start, then cloudy with rain for many, drier in the southeast, a high of 20 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Are we saying that it is okay for Reform to call Labour MPs names like Tutik here and Rachel from Cass? I thought the point was people weren't happy with that either. But then the Labour Party, certainly the upper echelons of the Labour Party, performing a not dissimilar tactic, calling it the Farage boats. Is it part of the attack you want to see Labour mount against Nigel Farage and Reform? Because God knows there's a lot of ground to make up in the polls.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on your radio, on Global Player and the LBC app.
Amazon has increased funding for employees to £3,000 a year every year for career development. Like Juliet, she's now a trained technician. And to her, the sound of machinery in need of repair reminds her of how far she's come. In 2 years, she's landed her dream job, providing her with valuable skills. That's up to £3,000 every year for career development at Amazon. Eligibility conditions apply.
I'd been in the family home for 30 years, but it was different. Too many rooms, too few voices. Moving to McCarthy Stone felt like a big step, but this place is full of life. I chat to someone every day, in the lounge, in the garden, even in the lift. I have my own apartment, but I'm never truly alone. I only wish I'd done it sooner.
Discover stunning retirement apartments exclusively for the over 55. Search McCarthy Stone or call 0800 153 3055. Age restrictions and qualifying criteria apply.
It's right up here in the London Eye.
But imagine being inside. Perfect panoramic views of the capital from iconic pods.
Then get 2 Sun Super Day stickers to the London Eye. 34,000 available from £19 and thousands on the Sun for free.
Pick up the paper this Saturday to start collecting. Only in the Sun.
T's and C's apply. Even for seagulls.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
8:34. Robert in East Grinstead responding to that Metropolitan Police show last night. Robert, what do you want to tell us? Good morning.
Hello, Robert. Hello, Nick. Hello. Sorry, I was just multitasking and failing. Morning. Hi. Good morning. Good morning.
Hello, Robert.
I just think it is a case of the BBC making news rather than reporting news.
Oh.
I think you could invert this. You could invert this. I mean, what the BBC has discovered is there's such a thing as non-polite society. There's polite society and non-polite society.
No, this is criminal behaviour, Robert.
Yeah, you might dislike the way that they talk, but these are people...
Deliberately snapping someone's tendons when trying to take fingerprints is criminal behaviour.
Was the tendon snapped?
Well, I wasn't there. The officer said he was, yes.
Well, that
deliberately mistreating an autistic suspect in the back of a van and applying pressure to his tendons so effectively gets dead leg. That is, again, criminal.
That wasn't the clip I saw. The clip I saw was someone was trying to flip a guy over in custody while searching him.
Did you watch the whole documentary?
Not the entire documentary,
That's
no.
That's fair enough. Well, I did, because it's my job. And there is an autistic suspect who, as I say again, the pressure is applied to effectively give him dead legs, and he's in enormous pain. This is criminal behaviour, Robert.
Well, I remember around about 2006, 2005, when I had psychosis, right. And I was actually thrown to the ground by the police very, very hard.
Right.
Often the police have to operate under circumstances where they're scared and nervous and they have to do their job.
Yep.
You could invert this situation and have the BBC do, say, a documentary on the Turkish mafia and release news. My gosh, they were really polite.
Right.
They were really polite. There is a thing called polite society, non-polite society. We can't police people's private lives. Yes, we can observe behaviours.
But it's not their private lives. It's their professional lives. We place in them, and they are, for the most part, an incredibly brave army of men and women who do their job and who protect us. But we give them enormous powers, and with those come responsibilities. And these officers, clearly, the way they behaved, are not taking that seriously enough. Robert, it's a fact, my friend.
Well, I haven't watched that entire documentary, but I do know that there are instances. We all have this agreement with the media, where the media kind of like is there to report things, and no one wants to become the news. I think he said it once before. We all kind of want to sort of live in polite society, but we will occasionally meet people that are not polite. And
Again, Robert, I'm grateful, and I'll let you get back to other tasks, not part of multitask, but it's not a question of politeness. This is a behaviour, question of criminal behaviour, right? That will, and very likely they will, could be charged, but if you or I behave like that, we would be nicked by the police. We don't then expect to be beaten up by the police or have our tendons broken because we won't give the fingerprints. We'll come back to that, but let's go to other stories. Now, I'm going to ask a question. I wonder if you're going to do it. Have you ever thieved from a shop deliberately? Have you? I will confess, I unintentionally once took something from, I think, a Sainsbury's or an Asda or something like that, and I realised I hadn't put it through the scanner. I don't know. Am I going to go back for a croissant? Oh, no, I don't know. I can't remember. I think I gave it to charity. I have no idea. But I don't get a thrill out of it, as more and more, I'm middle class shoplifters with nice houses, it says here. What's a nice house? This is in the Times. Middle-class shoplifters with nasty houses. And with nice houses and well-paid professional jobs are increasingly targeting high-end shops for the thrill. In Cambridgeshire, police report shoplifting increased by nearly a quarter this year, with the force saying many thefts were carried out by older, affluent people owning expensive homes. They've released footage of thieves targeting John Lewis, videos showing a well-dressed mother with her daughter hiding clothes in handbag, another well-dressed woman dropping perfume into an already full shopping bag, and another in the lingerie section, clearly putting items in her bag. Is that the reality? Is it now some kind of thrill? Fiona Malone is director at Tenby Stores and Post Office, and you've got enormous issues with shop theft, I understand, Fiona. Is that right? Morning.
Yes, we do, yeah.
What sort of things go? What is your typical shop thief, and what action needs to be taken?
So from our point of view, the shop theft we have is generally alcohol, high-value chocolates. So it's not cost of living at all. And the problem is we've stopped a number of people, we've tackled them, and they say to us, why are you stopping us? It's a victimless crime.
They don't realise that you, of course, it hits your bottom line.
Yeah, and it's our family-run business. And we're not only a shop, we're also a post office. So if we were to close, we're the only bank in town. But no one's thinking through the consequences of, you know, oh, I'll just take that chocolate bar because I can. And actually the implications that it could have. And we've already seen the high street declining.
This is making headlines because one force, Cambridgeshire, is surprised by how many people that they are investigating who are, they call, middle class with nice homes. Well, is that the same way you are? Or is it perhaps people who are a little more disadvantaged?
I wouldn't say necessarily all of our shoplifters are middle class, but all of them are not stealing to live. They're stealing the brands, you know, they're going for the branded wines, they're going for the branded, you know, the AU vodkas, you know, they will go for something because they know it will either sell on or it's something they want and they possibly get a thrill out of it.
So they're not doing it because they can't afford to eat or they need a loaf or whatever it might be. Is there also the fact that it is widely thought that the police are not taking anything like enough robust action on this?
Yeah, and there's no consequences. You know, by the time the police come and have a look at the footage, you know, sometimes it can take 6 months to 9 months for a prosecution, and there's no consequences for people. You know, I think what we should be doing is saying, right, okay, you've got a driving license. We'll give you one warning. If you shoplift, we'll then take away your driving license for 6 months.
Wow.
At least then that's something that's tangible, because at the moment, just giving them a slap on the wrist and saying, don't do it again. And a lot of the colleagues, so I work with the ACS, the Association of Convenience Stores, and a lot of my colleagues don't actually report the crimes because it's just too much and they haven't got the time to invest in it for what's being stolen.
Have you been able to work out what this costs your business?
this?
So it was costing us £26,000 a year.
Good
grief. Which would have closed us very, very quickly. We invested in X-Hoppers, so some AI technology with our CCTV, and we've definitely brought that down to just under
£13,000. Oh, so you've halved it.
That's still significant. And obviously we've invested in the technology.
And how does the AI, without giving anything away, how does the AI work?
So it picks up suspicious gestures. So if someone takes a product from the shelf and puts it in their pocket or puts it in a bag, it will then send a video to myself and the manager. And then we can actually review the footage to see if it's a genuine shoplift.
Good luck with Tenby Stores and Post Office. Fiona Malone is the director, and I hope you can continue to get down that amount of money that you and your business are losing. We'll come back to our conversation about the police. Serving officer, I'm just going to call Dave. I've been in the job 21 years. I no longer tell people I'm a police officer when off duty. I say I work in security. I don't keep my cash or debit card in my warrant card wallet, as I don't want to show out in public when off duty either, because of the widespread distrust of the public. The majority of my colleagues are good, honest, selfless people. The good work is not portrayed, only the negative. I look forward to the day I can retire and walk away. No wonder police can't recruit or retain officers. Paul's in Wisbeach. Paul, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Hello, Mr. Ferrari. Love his dog.
Good to have you on. What are you going to say? Did you watch the show?
No, I didn't. I'm just actually responding to Mary, who's saying that if a certain section of people in the Met are sort of like...
have these views, yep.
Yeah, have these views that the whole of what should be...
I found that a bit of a stretch, to be honest with you, sir.
But it's the same as having, sort of like, just because the majority of black people may be arrested for a certain crime, what do we then suddenly class all of the black people as criminals?
It doesn't make sense, does it? No, absolutely. Or to suggest in the light of the first story we did that every single man of Pakistani origin is into a grooming gang, which would be utterly nonsensical.
And I just don't know why people think that way. You know, everyone is individual. I can't see why you have to, tar people with the same sort of brush.
I think that's a really good point. And the way you link it, actually, to the previous conversation is very clever. Paul, have yourself a good day. Let's see if others agree with Paul. We're going to be taking more calls on that. Then in the next hour, thoroughly looking forward to it. That's probably the reason I came in, actually, even feeling like this. I wasn't going to miss the opportunity to speak with this man.
I've got two left feet.
I thought he was kidding.
But I wasn't. I was born with two left feet. And they had a nickname for me. They used to call me Loopy.
Oh, dear, I snorted. Eugene Levy there. Best in show, but probably best currently known for...
A toast!
A toast!
All right, you know what? I'm sitting at another table.
Schitt's Creek. Man alive, am I looking forward to that in the next hour. 8:45 LBC News headlines, Thomas Watts.
The Metropolitan Police Commissioner, Sir Mark Rowley, has told Nick that officers identified in damning undercover footage could be dismissed within weeks. A Home Office minister's told LBC that migrants are asylum shopping to look for soft-touch countries in Europe, and Israeli authorities have intercepted at least 13 boats from a Gaza-bound aid flotilla. LBC weather quite foggy this morning, then cloudy with rain for many, a high of 20 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Delays on the M25 clockwise from junction 14 at Heathrow to 17 at Maple Cross. It's following an accident. All the lanes are open now, but it's still very slow. Also delays on the M25 anti-clockwise at junction 29 at the A127 after an accident. Very busy on the A40 eastbound to the Medway underpass. A coach has broken down. And on the North Circular Road southbound at Hanger Lane, there's just been an accident and two lanes are closed. So that's very busy on the approach. On the trains, Thameslink services are delayed by about half an hour between St Pancras and Luton after that investigation from earlier. And on the underground, there are severe delays on the central line via Newbury Park.
This is LBC.
Ah, the everything shower. You are almost reborn. Reborn any second. Nope. Out you go. Cool air fills your lungs as you cry out.
One sec.
But in your luxuriously soft armour of bath towels, you feel stronger.
I'm coming!
a goddess reincarnated in shades of sage green.
Hiya. All right, here's your parcel. Just need a photo.
Hello, world. Whatever happens, style it out.
Thanks.
FNF.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
I've been asked by Shredded Wheat to read out their ingredients list. Drum roll. Whole grain wheat. No, that's it. A single ingredient, high fibre cereal. Shredded Wheat. It simply does it. I'm telling you, that's it. Applies to Shredded Wheat bite size and Big Biscuit only.
One of the best things about a holiday with Saga is your chauffeur, who'll pick you up and drive you to your departure point. Whether you're cruising through Europe's iconic cities along the Danube or enjoying a rainforest tour through Costa Rica. Even better, they'll pick you up and drive you home again afterwards. 2026 season now on sale. Search Saga Holidays. Experience is everything. Nationwide chauffeur service available on UK mainland. Full terms apply. Over 50s only.
Play Set for Life from the National Lottery. Winners get 10k every month for 30 years. You could win on repeat. Set for Life. Play now on the National Lottery app. Terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
It's right up here in the London Eye.
But imagine being inside. Perfect panoramic views of the capital from iconic pods.
Then get two Sun Super Day stickers to the London Eye. 34,000 available from £19 and thousands on the Sun for free.
Pick up the paper this Saturday to start collecting. Only in the Sun.
T's and C's apply. Even for seagulls.
At Amazon, over 50% of deliveries now come with less packaging. Or with no added packaging at all. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where you chat with friends, where your neighbour's daughter practices guitar, and where we deliver your new noise-cancelling headphones in the manufacturer's packaging. Ah, much better. Reduced packaging from Amazon. We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep, based on 2024 UK and EU Amazon packaging data.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
11 minutes before nine. Now, eagle-eared listeners, if there are such things, eagle-eared listeners might recall that earlier this week I spoke with the Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, up at the Labour Party conference in Liverpool, and towards the end of the conversation I put to him an investigation by one of the newspapers, the Daily Mail, into horrific goings-on at the Blackpool Victoria Hospital. A rapist consultant, nurses who drug patients for an easy life, a young man found dead in a toilet, and an elderly stroke victim sexually assaulted on the ward. LBC's Chris Chambers decided to investigate and filed this report.
My son was the loveliest person. They didn't help him, they failed him.
Jamie Pearson was 27 years old. He was brought here to the Blackpool Victoria Hospital in August last year, having suffered an episode of psychosis and taken an overdose.
The hospital's meant to be a place of help and safety, and Jamie was having a mental health crisis, and they always say, reach out if you're in a crisis, and that's what we both did.
Jamie took his own life in a disabled toilet at the hospital, having been left for 22 hours while staff worked out whether he needed a mental health assessment. At his inquest, the coroner ruled neglect was a contributory factor to his death. Here's his mum, Julie.
I said, how are you feeling? He went, my mental health's really deteriorated, mum, and I still feel suicidal. So I walked over to a nurse and told her, and I'll never forget, she berated Jamie, really. She put her hands on her hips. She walked over and said, we have to make sure you're medically fit before you see somebody from the mental health team. And that wasn't the case. They all apologised to me, but that's not going to bring my son back.
The neglect of Jamie is just one alarming case making headlines from the Vic. Last week, a consultant heart surgeon by the name of Amal Bose was jailed for sexual assaults on five women over a period of 5 years. There are cases of a consultant being found to be a rapist, cases where staff have been jailed for conspiring to drug and mistreat defenceless patients, cases of whistleblower concerns being ignored as well. Their rap sheet is extensive and concerning. Amy Rossall is a criminal neglect lawyer at Hudgell Solicitors.
Coroner, he highlighted that there was confusion as to whether a referral to the mental health team
had actually been made. He ultimately concluded that had Jamie been given appropriate care, he would not have died when he did.
On this show earlier on this week, Nick put the case to the Health Secretary, Wes Streeting.
A consultant who is a rapist, a nurse who drugged patients for, quote, an easy life, a young man found dead in a toilet, and an elderly stroke victim sexually assaulted on the ward.
That trust in Blackpool has been in a terrible state. We are going to turn Blackpool around, but I just want to say to all of those listeners from Blackpool that are listening this morning, if you need care, if you're in need of medical assistance, you've got to access health. Don't let these stories put you off. And I'm determined as our country's health secretary to support Maggie, to support their team, to turn that situation around. And I'm sorry to the people of Blackpool that that's what they've been suffering for so many years now.
We've had a statement from Blackpool Teaching Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust. The chief exec there has said, "I am truly sorry that we did not do more to keep Mr. Pearson safe." Goes on to say, "We have already taken steps to improve, but we know that we have more work to do," and thank the coroner for his findings.
Chris Chambers reporting. If you're involved in that, do give us a call. But it is a conversation about a different blue light service, the police, that's dominating what we're talking about today. Adrian's in Amersham. Adrian, thank you for hanging on the line. Your take on this documentary and the response from the Met. Morning.
Morning, Nick. Great show and good callers. A lot of people have said what is on my mind, actually. But look, none of us can. I don't condone what happened last night, and none of us do. Sorry, what we saw last night. But there's two big things that come out of this for me, these sort of patterns that we've seen. And you all know this from being a journalist and how people change when they're in a job. The first one is this constant labelling. We've had it this week. Mm. Political opponents as racist and...
Yeah. Well, racist policies, yeah.
Well, not Hitler Youth, I saw the video.
Oh, I'm sorry, David Lammy, yes, you're right,
This is just so lazy, and I expect better from people. In business, we never talk down the competition publicly. We go at people critically on the points they make, you know, on their commercial offer, on the service, the product, etc. And this is just nothing short of a scandal, but this just is the end of a long series of very... strong labels given out by the institutions to other institutions that where we end up with it very easy for people to just endorse the view that the police are institutionally racist. Going back to the McPherson report, you've had decades of people calling the police misogynists, homophobes, out of touch, bullies, etc., etc. And all the examples we see today about policing of speech, etc., etc., and how these things are taken by either side to make political points. I ask you, as an employer, yes, and your interview with Rowley was really good, we all have as employers a duty of care. You've got to be asking what happens to the officers after 5, 10, 15, 20 years. That phrase, black humour, that people use to be able to use to sort of alleviate the stress. They're in a very difficult position.
Well, not all of those. All right, that sergeant's got 20-plus years in, but some of those, I mean, those are lads. They're younger than my children. They're in their 20s, some of these fellas.
Exactly. So why weren't they spotted? And the point I'm making is it's the cynicism that people develop in this job. And I think the Police Federation, you need to do more. We can't just...
Well, the cynicism... I would just back up that, unfortunately, journalists... Like police, we have a very dark sense of humour. It's a fact, because not so much in the job I do now, but if you're in editing a newspaper or news editing, all you ever hear about are bombs, deaths, stabbings. You would just be in tears every day of your working life. So you have to develop... Now, that doesn't mean you then decide that you're going to make racist or inappropriate comments. Do you see what I'm saying, Adrian? So we've got to realise what these men and women do every day.
I didn't... As I said at the start, what we saw yesterday, and those guys will be... The people involved will be dealt with by the process and likely sacked. And that's right. And none of us are condoning... I'm not condoning anything like that. Quite the opposite. But what I am saying, you cannot, in positions of authority, continually label people, yes, in a negative fashion... And it not expect there to be consequences.
Adrian, from the perspective of running a business, thank you. Only finishing to get more people involved. Thanks for hanging on the line. Have yourself a good day. 4 to 9 the time. Someone else who's in the job but asks me to keep his or her name. I watched a documentary. It was an utter disgrace, a betrayal. There'll be those that say it's a normal outlet for the trauma they experience, and they are wrong. I've seen things in my career I wouldn't wish on anyone. Acts of utter barbarity committed against the most vulnerable. We deal with it together without losing our humanity. Those men were never one of us, and they need to be instantly dismissed. Well, you heard here on LBC that if the commission has his way, they will be gone within weeks. What's annoying is we're still paying them currently. Paul's in Worcester Park. Paul, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Hi there. I have a lot of time for you, and I'm surprised you're not taking a more cynical attitude towards that documentary. Now, I didn't see it, but I'm going to pick on 2 points that you've been talking about. One, about the police officer talking about the breaking or the breaking of attendance. This sounds to me just like banter, just like boasting. There's no evidence, right, apart from his own bravado and bragging that this happened. No one's come forward. If someone had their fingers broken while having their fingerprints taken, they'd ask for a police surgeon to be in attendance, who quite quickly noticed even recent injuries. There's no evidence it happened, is there?
But he did brag about doing it on more than one occasion.
There's no evidence it happened, though, is there?
Well, okay, but I think...
No, but just say no, because there's not, is there?
I can't give you any evidence that it happened, save for the
right,
man's...
Right, okay, so could you speak bravado? Hold on,
save for his confession.
But it wasn't a confession, it's just bravado.
Admission, whatever word you want. Save for the man saying, I did it, which is normally compelling in a court of law. If a judge says, did you do it? Yes, I did it. Well, that's probably going to be enough to see him convicted.
A court of law will often not take a police officer's evidence.
But in many instances, if you find yourself in court and you're asked by a magistrate or a judge, did you do this? And you say, yes, I did it. The judge, he or she, is not going to say, right, now I need to see evidence. They're going to
He's not in court.
But it's enough already.
Because people quite often will not believe police officers on their own.
We're going to disagree agreeably on that. I think you wanted to make another point. Yeah.
And also there would be cameras in the police station. Right, the other one is the remark you made about Somali people. If that's his lived experience, why is it wrong for him to say that?
Because, oh my God, I don't know where to start. Because we invest enormous power and trust in these people that they will carry out their duties without fear or favour. That is, that if you happen to be Somalian or homosexual or autistic or whatever it might be, you will be released in just the same way as you were half Swiss or straight or whatever it might be. You can't have someone serving in such a key role who has those views. Come on,
Paul. He didn't say he wouldn't be impartial. He just said in his experience, Paul, they were this manner. Paul. But you've had people ringing your station up this morning saying that these few officers cast all officers in a bad light.
No, I don't agree
and yet
with
one
that.
Person who says he deals with Somalis, and you're only going to be dealing with criminal Somalis, is not allowed to make the same sort of statement.
I agree. It's ridiculous to suggest that every single police officer, and I have gone to great lengths to make that point, but when the commissioner has responded in the way that he has, I think that tells us about the severity or gravity of what's going on. Paul, I'm grateful for you, and I will agreeably disagree with you on this occasion. I look forward to speaking to you again. The music means we must move on. And we move on by moving out, should Michelle Baroness Mohn be booted out of the House of Lords. Here she is selling the BBC back in 2023.
Hindsight's a wonderful thing. I wasn't trying to pull the wool over anyone's eyes. I can't see what we've done wrong.
Plus, upgrading Donald Trump's flags for a brighter shade of Make America Great Again when he came to... But how much did we have to spend so that the colours were brighter for a president? All those stories and more, follow the 9 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, the Metropolitan Police Commissioner, Sir Mark Rowley, has again declined to say the force is institutionally racist.
Frankly, the words I use aren't that important. Different commissioners have used different words. Some have used the institutional racism phrase, some haven't. That's not what's going to change things. It's the action, it's the hard, sharp action we're taking that is making progress. But as I say, I'm not any illusion there's more to do.
Okay, you're not going to say you're institutionally racist, homophobic, misogynist. You're not prepared to say that?
No.
Sir Mark Rowley was speaking to Nick after secret filming at Charing Cross Police Station in London. The commissioner says the footage shows ghastly evidence of racism, misogyny and officers relishing in using excess force. He's told us that those involved could be dismissed in weeks.
That would be... as fast as is possible.
That's your goal, is it, Commissioner?
That's my goal. I'm dependent upon the IOPC. We can only go to fast processes if the evidence is incontrovertible, is the word in police regulations. But frankly, for many of those people last night, the evidence looks to me incontrovertible.
The Prime Minister says Sir Mark needs to be very robust in his response. A migration minister's told Nick that changes to the asylum system will create a level playing field. They include a tougher route to long-term settlement and ending refugees' automatic right to bring their families to Britain. Sir Keir Starmer's due to discuss the plans at a meeting of European leaders in Denmark. He spoke to reporters as he arrived in Copenhagen this morning.
We're certainly discussing illegal migration and looking at what further options we can take together. Obviously, I've always argued that working with other countries is always a stronger response. So we're looking at a number of options there. There's a big appetite for it, a number of countries wanting to work with us on what more we can do.
Israeli authorities have intercepted at least 13 boats from a Gaza-bound aid flotilla. The environmental campaigner Greta Thunberg was among the passengers arrested and taken to the port of Ashdod. The flotilla's organisers say dozens of vessels are still heading towards the territory. A future Conservative government would scrap Britain's landmark climate legislation. The Tory leader, Kemi Badenoch, says she'd replace the Climate Change Act with a strategy for cheap and reliable power. Thames Water's lenders have put forward a new rescue deal for the firm. The consortium has proposed another £1 billion in investment and plans to write off a quarter of its £20 billion debt pile. The company remains on the brink of nationalisation. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was at 94.55. That is up 9 points. The pound buys $1.34 and the euro 14. LBC weather, foggy this morning, then cloudy with rain for many, but drier in southeast England. A high of 20 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Fraud can happen faster than you think. But at Barclays, we use innovative technology that spots fraud in under a second. And our dedicated team of experts work 24/7. So you can go about your day knowing we never stop working to keep you and your money safe. Search Barclays Fraud Protection to see how you can stay one step ahead. Barclays, make money work for you.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 3 minutes after nine on Thursday, October the 2nd. In this hour, exposed the COVID fraud. Must repay £122 million after selling the government faulty gowns during the pandemic. But shouldn't we boot Baroness Mohn, Michelle Mohn, out of the House of Lords? We'll look at that in more detail. Plus, it's called the Starmer effect. Now, before the Prime Minister got behind the idea of digital ID, 57% of voters were in favour. Now, a few days after endorsing it, it's down to 42%, which shows actually anything he supports now, the public automatically think is a bad idea. We'll look at that. We'll also look at the fact that we had to upgrade Donald Trump's flags for a brighter shade of MAGA. American flags flown for the president's visit replaced, but how much did it cost the taxpayer? You might be surprised at that. And what exactly was the problem with the old ones? And simply because there's another excuse to play it. Hopefully later in this hour, this tremendous actor...
I've got two left feet.
I thought he was kidding.
But I wasn't. I was born with two left feet. And they had a nickname for me. They used to call me Loopy.
There's Eugene Levy in Best in Show, of course. Better known, perhaps, for...
How's the brisket, Mr. Rose?
Well, it's tasting more like meat.
He's with us later in the hour.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Baroness, you see, I put that word. If I was writing that, it would be in single quotes. You see, I had to do that, not Baron. Baroness, Baroness Mohn faced calls to be axed as a peer after a firm she is linked to was ordered to pay back £122 million of COVID cash. The High Court yesterday ruling that PPE MedPro, led by her husband, Doug Barrowman, or even Barrowman, breached a Conservative deal by supplying unusable pandemic gowns. Now, 2 years ago, Baroness Mohn said this on the BBC.
Hindsight's a wonderful thing. I wasn't trying to pull the wool over anyone's eyes, and I regret and I'm sorry for not saying straight out, yes, I am involved. My family have gone through hell with the media over, you know, my career. And I didn't want another big hoo-ha in the press and my family to be involved in it.
A real moan from Moan there. But what of getting the cash back? Chancellor Rachel Reeves said yesterday...
We had managed to bring back £400 million of taxpayers' money. There's another £122 million today. And I want to be clear, anyone who got a government contract, either during COVID or at other times, where the contract was not being fulfilled, we will come after that money.
It's an extraordinary story for this woman, born in poverty in Glasgow's East End. It is rags to riches, says the Sun newspaper. She became one of Britain's best-known business leaders. She was raised in a one-bedroom house where her childhood was marked by hardship. Her younger brother died when he was 8. She left school with no qualifications, aged 15, to help support her family after her father lost a leg through cancer. It's almost as grim as it can get. Her early career included stints as a model. I have to say I've worked on a television show with Michelle Moon. She's an extraordinarily... Baroness Moon. She's a very, very possessive, very attractive woman. Also quite a... What's the word? Forceful, that's the word I'm looking for. Quite a forceful woman if you debate her, I have to say that. And then a rapid rise to become head of marketing for a brewer company in Scotland. Then her business career really took off in the 1990s when she co-founded a company with her then-husband, Michael Moan, and they launched the Ultimo Bra. Gosh, was that in 1999? I can remember the adverts like they were the day before, yesterday, in Selfridges in London. So, I've had a quick look, and these are obviously only down figures that you get, but apparently, she's got £120 million in the bank. Mr. Barrowman has £350 million in the bank. The company that they have just folded, and I mean just folded, has circa 600,000, and we're after £122 million. So what happens now? Matt Dronfield, Managing Director of Debt Free Advice, offering referrals for businesses in debt, joins me now. Good to have you on board, Mr. Dronfield. Is there some kind of legal mechanism that the government can explore here? Morning to you.
Morning, Nick. Well, the normal route would be through an administration process. The Department of Health will lodge a claim as a creditor and hope to recover funds from whatever assets remain. But as you've heard, there's only 666,000 left in that shell of a company that's been put in administration this week. On top of that, the administrators could pursue legal claims against directors if money has been unfairly extracted before that company was winded down. And you might have seen that the National Crime Agency has already frozen £75 million of assets. So that could be targeted. But if we're looking at the easy route to getting that money back from the company itself, very little is going to be able to be pulled back from that. There's only 666,000 that's left in their company.
So if I'm, let's say I'm running a company, let's call it the Nick Ferrari Company, and I know there's a big debt coming, and let's play with my fingers, and it's £50,000, and I just fold the company on a Tuesday, then the debt comes in on a Wednesday or a Thursday, and I might have a few grand in my bank, but you can't get at it. Is that the reality, Matt?
Well, it all happens what's happened just before that. So if it's found that the directors or people that have had influence in that company has extracted funds just before you've tried to kind of wind that company down, there is a legal route to being able to claw that back, but it's very expensive and it's very time consuming.
What do you see happening next? Because Rachel Reeves is saying, quite rightly, we're going to go after the money. It would be quite extraordinary if she said, well, I don't care. But in reality, Matt, I'm picking up from you, probably not through any fault of her own, but her hands are almost certainly tied.
I think they are. I mean, there's two avenues. There's one that is through the administrators who could potentially sue the directors of that company if they find there is wrongdoing. And if they argue the case that money was unlawfully extracted before it was wound down. And the second one is through the NCA, the National Crime Agency, which has frozen £75 million linked to Moan and Barrowman. But both of those depend on quite long, lengthy investigations, and both are far from certain.
Thanks very much, Matt. Matt Dronfield, Managing Director of Debt Free Advice, offering referrals for businesses in debt. So that's the financial side. Let's talk a little bit about the political side. Of course, Michael Gove was then a senior minister. He was approached. She was on the so-called VIP fast track or fast lane. During the trial heard at the High Court, MedPro, the company that supplied the gowns, claimed the gowns were sterilised using radiation at a factory in China where they were made. But the judge said they'd not proved it, so they were not contractually speaking sterile or properly validated as being sterile. The judge went on, that means they could not be used as sterile gowns in the NHS or elsewhere. The judge gave MedPro, as I say, 2 weeks to pay Well, listen to this, £121,999,219. I think we can say 20. I think we can say £122 million plus interest. But just to explain, as we were hearing there from Matt Dronfield, the company had hired administrators on Tuesday, a day before the court decision, to see how much was taken out. Show the politics side. Does she now get booted out of the House? Paul Richards, former Labour special advisor, author of How to Be a Spin Doctor. What should happen to her now, Paul? Good morning.
Good morning. I think you and I have observed plenty of these over the years, and there is an inevitability now to what's going to happen next. I mean, she's presenting herself as the victim in the story, and poor me and my poor family and all of that. But I think two things happen. One is that there is going to be ever greater attempts to get the money back, because that's our money and we want it back. But secondly, the political clamour will be for her to be removed as a lawmaker, because lawmakers can't be law breakers. The mechanism to do that is there. There is a Disqualification of the Peers Act, relatively recent, 2015, but it does allow the authorities there to boot people out. But honestly, I think she should just resign from the House of Lords straight away and just, you know, give us all a, do us all a favour and just get out.
How does the process get started? Does an MP have to start it? Does another a fellow Lord or Lady have to start it? How does it begin?
It's the Lords themselves that can do this. And she's currently suspended anyway, so she's not actually sitting in there. But, you know, if you're in the Lords, it can be for life. Most of them are lifers, as you know. So there is a process that the Lords themselves can take up. And I'm pretty sure they will. I mean, I think there's a lot of anger in Parliament around this. And, you know, also whataboutery. You know, you can always get into the whataboutery about this person or that person. But in this particular case, it's obviously bang to rights. And it's obviously a inevitability that she will be removed from our Lords.
What does it say to the fast track or fast lane process all those years ago, Paul?
Well, I think that was a disgrace. I mean, I think, you know, ministers will defend it and they will say, oh, well, you know, it was an unusual time, we had to act quickly. But so many people then piled in, saw that as an opportunity to make cash. And I just think that's so morally reprehensible. We shouldn't forgive, we shouldn't forget.
Paul Johnson, great. Paul Richards, very grateful to you. Thank you, former Labour special advisor Paul Richards. You wrote How to Be a Spin Doctor. It's an extraordinary amount of money this woman has, an extraordinary story, and it looks as though it will probably now be coming to an end. I mean, she has six homes, a private jet, a 135-foot yacht, 15 cars, including matching Ferraris. Now, look, I'm all for having your day car that you take down to Sainsbury's or Asda, and a car that you have if you want to go for a long journey out with your husband, your wife, your boyfriend, your partner, your mistress, I don't care. So you have a lovely sports car and you just have a little, if you can afford it, a run around that everybody opens their door on. I get that, and you park that at the railway station. But who needs 15 cars and two matching Ferraris? Ian's in Waterloo. Ian, should she be booted out of the House of Lords?
Good morning, Nick. I'm not interested in the House of Lords. I think she should be thrown in jail.
Right,
what she
I mean,
did
okay.
was disgusting. Right. And you used the word fraud earlier on, Nick, so, you know, I don't think I'm overstating this. Her and her husband should be thrown in jail and the key thrown away for what she's done. And making herself the victim now is reprehensible. And I think that the National Crime Agency should look into Michael Gove and Matt Hancock and Boris Johnson and the others as well. Because it was a despicable period in this country's history and what they've got away with. And all we're talking about now is taking the title off her. No. It needs to be far sterner than that, Nick.
I've questioned Matt Hancock about, not this case, but questionable involvement of some contracts that were awarded on his watch. And he said you had to realise it was almost like being in a war. If someone came forward on a trusted mechanism and said, look, Nick Farage just contacted me. Ian in Waterloo is a great bloke and he's going to be able to supply loads of masks for us. Oh, if Nick likes him, Ian, then Hancock was offered that as a defence. Ian.
There was a lady that rang James O'Brien up and said, look, I had ventilators there and was willing to give them. And they rejected them and they went to a company that didn't make ventilators. This woman produces bras in China.
I know.
It's reprehensible, Nick. Nick, she should go to jail for what she's done.
Ian, thank you. Coming up after the news, the popularity of Sir Keir Starmer or total lack of it. A policy that many of you enjoyed until a few days ago.
This government will make a new free-of-charge digital ID mandatory for the right to work. You will not be able to work in the United Kingdom if you do not have digital ID.
And before the Prime Minister said that, polling shows that 57% of you were in favour, so it would have done easily. Now, after he's endorsed it, it's dropped to 42%. The Starmer touch. 9:16, LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
The head of the Metropolitan Police has again declined to say the force is institutionally racist after secret filming uncovered racism and misogyny at a police station in London. A migration minister has told Nick that changes to the asylum system will create a level playing field, and Israeli authorities have intercepted a number of boats from a Gaza-bound aid flotilla. LBC weather, cloudy with rain for many, but drier in the southeast, a high of 20 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Delays on the M40 southbound to the M25 junction. It's following an accident and there are queues on the approach. And also delays continue on the A40 eastbound to the Medway underpass. And that's where a coach has broken down. And there are long delays back past Northolt. On the North Circular Road southbound at Hanger Lane, there were restrictions following an accident. Everything's open, but there are delays still all the way back past Stonebridge Park. Very foggy in Guildford this morning. That's causing delays in the area, especially on the A30. Heading eastbound to the A3. And at Gatwick Airport, there are delays on the A23 Airport Way going northbound because a car's broken down. And on the Underground, there are severe delays on the Central Line.
LBC.
Angela Rippon, what are you doing here?
I've come to tell you about using energy flexibly, Albert.
Flexibly?
Yes, smart meter owners could get rewarded for moving their energy use, like doing the laundry at off-peak times.
So I don't need to do the splits?
No, Albert, nobody wants to see that.
Get rewarded for using energy flexibly, only with a smart meter. Search Get a Smart Meter today.
Eligibility and availability vary. Consumer action required. Reward schemes and tariffs available to selected customers from selected suppliers.
This is LBC. Listen on Global Player or the LBC app. Download it from your app store now.
Welcome on board this LNER service from London King's Cross to Edinburgh. My name's Paul, your train manager today. And hang on, is that Scrabble tournament in coach here? Yes, G with an X is a word. Right, we're cruising at 125 miles per hour. Same speed this lad next to me is typing. Someone's on a roll. The cafe bars in Coach G if you fancy a brew, or if you're mid-box set binge, just order through the QR code at your seat. We'll deliver it. So sit back and enjoy your journey. With LNER, it's freedom all the way.
This year, Amazon are increasing the electric delivery vehicles we use across Europe to 10,000. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where babies are made a fuss of, where we deliver footballs for kids' kickabouts, and where they deliver the football straight into next door's garden.
Can they have their ball back, please?
We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Delivery service partner vehicles across the UK and EU.
Stayshore. What is Stayshore? Stayshore is not just the UK's favourite travel insurance. Stayshore is the confidence that comes with knowing that you're covered by the company with more five-star reviews on Trustpilot than any other provider. A company that welcomes people of all ages with pre-existing medical conditions for single or multiple trips. So Stayshore with Stayshore Travel Insurance. UK's favourite relates to number of five-star Trustpilot reviews, T's and C's and verifications at stayshore.co.uk/reviews.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
Let's continue our conversation about the fate awaiting Marinus Moan. Ian's in Windsor. Ian, you're on the radio. Your view on this. What needs to happen? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Hello, I think there needs to be a full inquiry into this. It's not just the $120 million spent on these gowns or the fact the gowns were useless. It's why did the gowns cost $120 million? Why was the contract given to her when there were proper PPE manufacturers willing to help and donate stuff for free, and they weren't given access to this shady VIP lane?
Well, now that's there. I'm with you on that, because I think in the heat of war, that we can look back on now, five whatever years it on, yes, why not? So I do think decisions are being taken at an extraordinary rate. But this VIP lane, fast lane, that does give me a lot of cause for concern, Ian. I think you're right there.
Yes, and it's not just that. Remember the $34 billion spent on that rubbish test and trace system that didn't
track
work.
Track and trace, I think it was
called,
the
Germans spent $3 billion and theirs worked. I mean, there needs to be... Where did all that money literally go? And that's the point regarding apparently this AppPro company that she owns.
NetPro.
There's only $600K left in the coffers, so we might, there might be a court order to get that money back, but let's see if we get it back. I very much doubt it.
Well, okay, I agree. But lastly, I think we can... take heart. Is that fair? Yes, I think, because clearly this woman has behaved in a what would appear to be fraudulent fashion. We can take heart that the the National Crime Agency are involved, Ian. That they have extraordinary powers. They can go into your taxes. They can do just about anything. They could probably claim her boats if they wanted to.
Yes, well, I hope they're all over it and they don't just end with her. I think there's probably a lot more of this to come out.
Ian, thank you. We'll take more calls on that in a moment. Now, we're going back to politics, but don't worry. This is quite an interesting one because... it's almost reverse of what I would imagine Sir Keir and his team would hope for, because interesting work by the Times newspaper has discovered. I'll share the figures with you now. The idea of this digital ID, so this is not an ID card. I know a lot of people say ID cards. It's not an ID card. It's typically going to be on your phone, and it'll pretty much have everything on it. It'll have, obviously, your date of birth, your NI, national insurance number, various other things, boom. And they also, supporters also say it would have everything you need if you needed to rental accommodation. You wouldn't have to try and find an old electricity bill or sky bill or gas bill or whatever it might be. So that's, they speak of the merits. And what's intriguing, as the paper points out, is that prior to Sir Keir Starmer's endorsement of it, polling showed that 57% of voters were in favour of digital ID, 25% against. Now, a few days on from the government and Sir Keir's endorsement, it's 42% who are in favour and 45% against. What does this say of Sir Keir's endorsement? Scarlett Maguire, founder and director of Merlin Strategy, joins me now. This is the exact reverse of what you want to be the PM effect, isn't it? Good morning, Scarlett.
Good morning, Nick. You know, you're absolutely right. It has not been a very good rollout of this policy, especially, as you say, because actually before they announced it, it was popular. And I do think part of that is because there's been the emphasis on digital ID. Now, the government would say that would have always been the case. But in previous polling questions, that wasn't always made clear to people. So I think that's part of the reason why you'd see the support reduced amongst older generations, for example, which it has. But overall, you're right. It's a swing against the policy. And I think that is definitely substantially in part to which the way it was rolled out, not just because Keir Starmer and the government isn't popular, but also the way they did it.
Let me ask you this. You're a veteran conference watcher, possibly attendee, you unfortunate woman. How do you think Liverpool came off?
Yeah, it does feel quite unfortunate to me at the moment, but just so many. But no, Liverpool, I thought they did much better than probably they were even expecting to. I think Andy Burnham did Keir Starmer a massive favour. And certainly, I think internally and with Labour Party, he finishes the conference in a much stronger place than he started. Now, look, conferences never really...
It's got to be delivery now, though, isn't it, Sky? It's all very well to say. We have to deliver now, right?
That's exactly it. And I thought that was what was missing from the leader's speech, actually. It's all very well saying, you know, people who... do all these things are the enemies of national renewal, but we still didn't actually hear what national renewal is and how they're going to get there. It was also the case that was, you know, that's what people were asking from last year's speech, which didn't happen. And I think that's what the public are getting impatient about. It's about, you know, we think the country's not in a very good place, but what are you actually going to do about it? And I think if they don't do anything to properly start communicating and actually doing that clearly, then they're going to keep being in quite a lot of trouble.
Noting with Merlin Strategy, you're all about strategy. What did you make of the idea of really taking the fight to Nigel Farage, which I understand, and you probably picked up in conversations as Liverpool as well, this wasn't an off-the-cuff. They've been planning this right through the summer, that this was going to be the new look of Sir Keir.
Labour's best hope in 2029 is that the election, I think, turns into a referendum on Nigel Farage, and that because of that, Keir Starmer is able to coalesce sort of Liberal parties around him, so Labour, Greens, Lib Dems, Progressive parties, and take that fight to Nigel Farage, and hopefully I think they would think they'd win some Conservatives at the same time. Firstly, I think that's easier to do on paper than it is in practice, and we're seeing, I think there's quite a lot of the vote that's already left Keir Starmer's to its left, which is not coming back. They especially
you mean to
the
Greens and Lib Dems,
like
Scarlett?
Exactly, and yeah, I think especially those who've left to the Greens, a lot of it is not actually driven by the environment, but what they you know, perceived to be moral failures of Keir Starmer for selling out his sort of Corbynite platform that he stood on, for going back what he says, and on also the government's previous positions on things like Gaza. I think they're going to be very hard to win back. There's quite a lot of anger there. We focus a lot on the anger of reform voters. There's parts of the left-wing vote which are very angry too. And I don't think it's going to be that easy to coalesce them. But look, I think taking the fight to Farage and reform is the right thing to do. I am not sure that the strategy of making it about, I mean, they would say it was about the racism of one policy. I don't think turning it into a sort of referendum on racism or implied racism of Farage and reform is necessarily the right way to go. And the reason why I say that is because it's very hard to land a nuanced message to say this one policy is racist, not the leader, not the party, and certainly not you, the supporters. What people generally tend to hear instead, especially those voters who were called racist throughout the Brexit referendum, etc., which make up a large part of reform's vote, I think if anything, it will turn more people away.
Let's finish by looking forward. It was notable, and Scarlett, you'll have picked up on this as well. I can't remember how many times we heard about Mr. Farage or reform in Sir Keir's speech. We heard the Tories once as a gag, and quite a good gag, actually. Can anybody remember that?
Yeah.
And I thought that was a good line, in fairness to the man, or his writers. What do they need to do in Manchester?
Well, look, it was actually, yeah, that was a funny line. It was actually a very good performance from Keir in terms of, in its own terms. I mean, the Tories in Manchester are in absolutely dire straits. I think Kemi Badenoch was out to say their leader, calling the Tory party a distressed asset. I mean, that's slightly putting to a side. It's got significantly more distressed since she took over, not less. They've gone back by a third in polling averages since their worst ever electoral defeat. They need to save off relevance. That's the most damaging thing to them. You're absolutely right. It's not, you know, you're in real trouble when your enemies aren't even bothering attacking you anymore.
What a great line to finish on. Scarlett Maguire, thank you, founder and director of Merlin Strategy. We might talk more about digital ID, but it is the £122 million owed to us, particularly the NHS, that we're talking about, and what happens to the person in part behind that, Michelle Baroness. Mo, Nick's in Market Harbour. Nick, you were involved with a company that did something during COVID. What was it, sir? Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. I'm the managing director of a company just outside Market Harbour, and during the whole COVID panic, we were able to and successfully apply for a government grant to develop. Oh, I've just come down some stairs.
Don't worry.
To develop some vaccine coolers now.
Vaccine coolers, did you say?
Vaccine transportation system.
Oh, right, got it. Okay.
There was, there was an issue about getting these vaccines from A to B. And we spent, the government gave us tens of thousands of pounds in handouts. And yet when we finally developed this system, we weren't able to sell it because we couldn't get in contact with anybody in the government that would then pull this forward.
So the government funded you to do some research, you produce the product, and then they just go cold on you?
Yes.
Good gracious. So yes. What happened to the product?
I'm looking at it now. It's sort of just sat in a pile in the corner of our warehouse.
You've lost money, or the NHS paid you for a product it never used?
The government paid us through a grant to develop a product that essentially we were never able to sort of ratify with them, because after we developed them, they never wanted to engage about. Actually take it on board. And this, every time I hear about, people like the whole Mona affair.
Yeah, of course. Of course. Lastly, there is no measure for this, but how chaotic was it at this time then, Nick?
Well, it's pretty insane, yeah. I mean, we were one of the lucky companies that were able to a certain degree to capitalise on it. We rose to the occasion. Yeah, we're a technical engineering company, and we put a certain amount of our own cash in, but nothing ever came of it.
Nick, thank you for sharing the story with us. Total change of pace coming up after news, and goodness knows we could do with lifting the mood. You'll be hearing from...
Now that I'm considered something of a traveller, I've challenged myself to complete my own bucket list before actually kicking the bucket.
Eugene Levy will be joining us, the Reluctant Traveller, Series 3 on Apple TV+. and it's an absolute treat to talk with him in just a few minutes' time. 9:30, Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC News. Thomas Watts.
The Met Police Commissioner's told Nick that officers filmed in an undercover sting could be sacked within a few weeks. Sir Mark Rowley says the footage shows incontrovertible evidence of racism, misogyny and officers relishing in using excess force. Sir Keir Starmer is to discuss plans to reform the asylum system at a meeting of European leaders. They include changing requirements for long-term settlement and ending refugees' automatic right to bring their families to Britain. Israeli authorities have intercepted at least 13 boats from an aid flotilla heading for Gaza. Greta Thunberg was among the passengers taken to a port in Israel, but organisers say dozens of boats are still en route. LBC weather quite foggy this morning, then cloudy with rain for many, drier in the southeast of England. A high of 20 degrees.
LBC. Across the UK, people like Phil face their toughest challenges alone.
It's a pain that I feel like the body can't comprehend losing a child because you are not supposed to outlive your children.
LBC's charity, Make Some Noise, is here to support people like Phil.
It's kind of a family that you never wanted to be a part of and you would never choose to be a part of it. But now you're in it, you don't know what you'd do without.
You can change lives. Donate now at makesomenoise.com. Proudly supported by Furniture Village.
Amazon offers term-time working to their employees, like Anton, who's home to look after his daughters during their holidays.
Hello!
To him, this is the best sound in the world. Actually, maybe that's the best sound of all. Now that's term-time working. Offered at Amazon. 10 weeks off guaranteed per year. Mix of paid holiday and unpaid time off. Conditions apply.
Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
So with all the problems of the world to discuss, how marvellous to take out a few minutes and completely change the mood and talk with a true comedy giant.
Now that I'm considered something of a traveller, I've challenged myself to complete my own bucket list before actually kicking the bucket.
Why can't Mexico?
Apparently, these are some of the greatest once-in-a-lifetime travel experiences you can have.
Surely one of the most distinguishable voices there can possibly be. It's Eugene Levy, and that's the trailer for The Reluctant Traveller on Apple TV+. And the man is sitting opposite me. They say, Eugene, you should never meet your heroes, but I'm going to take the risk with you. Thank you for coming to the studio.
Wow. Well, this is fun. I got, by the way I'm being treated, I should be coming at least once a month.
Done. Yes. Booking. Okay. So this season, you go to Austria, Canada, England, India, Ireland, Mexico. You're just being paid for having fun. That's the reality, isn't it?
It's not a bad gig to have at my age, but, you know, it's been a great series, I have to say, and I'm hopefully getting better at it.
The listeners who are coming new to this, what is the premise? What do we see you do?
Well, it's a travel show, but it, basically I'm not a what you would call a traveler anywhere near a seasoned traveler, and that was kind of the basis of the show, and I loved the premise of it because I actually could be myself, and there was a degree of honesty that I was able to have on camera.
When you say be yourself.
Well, because I've never been myself on camera before. You know, I always get my laughs through the characters that I've played in films and TV shows. Yeah. And, the idea of being myself, you know, being a character actor particularly, the further away from me I was, the more comfortable I was. So starting this show, I'm out there and it's just me. And I was nervous about that because, you know, I was never that secure.
So what have you learned about Eugene Levy from doing this show?
Well, two things. One, I've had to reveal a bit more about myself.
You're comfortable with that?
I'm getting more comfortable with it because I never, ever talked about myself or my family or my private life or anything else. But for this show, in order for people to totally understand why I'm so reluctant to do this or do that, I mean, it's, you can't just say it. You have to get to know the person, and I had to reveal more about myself. So I think that's a positive thing for me. And the other thing is, you know, I was never really what you call a social animal in my private life. I was never really a chit-chatter. I would never go up to somebody in a store at the cash register and just start chatting up a conversation. No.
You seem to have such self-confidence, but
I'm developing that on the show, and the key to this show right now is that the art of travel, I'm learning, is you have to talk to the people who live in these countries and in cities, because I learn more about the culture and you know, the history and the country through the people that I'm having these encounters with. And it's been, I think, a really positive thing for me.
Tell us about some of your fellow travelers as well, some famous faces who go on your trips with you.
Well, it's, you know, in our second season, we had an episode with Dame Joan Collins, and that was in Saint-Tropez. Thank you.
France. Yeah, not at
where she has a place. So it would seem like that would be a lovely person to meet, and it was. And this year, we have my daughter. We did the Ireland episode, kind of a St. Patrick's Day episode in Ireland with my daughter, who that was an absolute joy and always is working with her. We did an episode with Michael Bublé in Canada, in Vancouver. I had never met the man before, but I'd been a huge fan.
Of course.
For years, and we hit it off instantly, and it was, I think, an episode where we probably have the most laughs in an episode. And then, of course, here in England, I had a delightful day with His Royal Highness, the Prince of Wales.
Yeah. Never name drop. The King told me that, as I always say. This is a quick gag that I sometimes use. Well, I've met the Prince maybe 4 or 5 times. Incredibly great sense of humor, really warm guy. I've never made a TV show with him, Eugene. How's that?
It is surreal in a way, you know. I mean, it's a word that kept rolling around in my head while I was with him, thinking, my, this is surreal, isn't it? But he's just a delightful gentleman. You know, he pulled up in his scooter that was for our first encounter, and I think that was sending a signal that, you know what, if you think you know what you're getting, you're not going to get it.
That's quite smart, isn't it?
I think it was, you know, and I think he was letting everybody know that this is going to be a very informal, very casual, you know, kind of conversation.
Yeah. Yeah,
and it was a side, and I felt really good personally that he was comfortable enough with me.
How do you
to
put them at ease, Eugene? So you've got the future King of England, you've got Michael Bublé, you've got an international cricketer. How much research do you do? How do you put them at ease? Do you look for like a gag to get it going? What do you do?
There's not a lot of research. I didn't have to do a lot of research with the Prince.
With William, no.
Not a lot of research. I think it's just I'm trying to, again, I'm trying to be myself.
Yep.
I'm getting much better than when I started, you know, the show. And, you know, I wish I had an answer. I wish I could say I knew what it was that makes people feel as comfortable as they do, you know, around me. But it's something, I guess, you know, I'm putting out. Okay. I don't okay. really know, to be honest.
So with all this going on, how do you relax?
In my life?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, I find mostly I'm a very relaxed person, so I seem to be relaxed even when I'm not relaxed. I seem to be relaxed when I'm working, and I seem to be relaxed when I'm at home, you know, relaxing. But for a relaxed guy, you know, I don't like to do a lot of napping. I don't.
Right.
Some people can take a quick nap. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah.
I just, for some reason,
yeah.
I don't have the time.
Yeah.
You know why? Too relaxed. I'm just too relaxed. So, it's just, I don't stress. I don't stress about things.
Right.
And I find if you don't do that, unfortunately, that falls to other people, like my wife. I mean, you know, so she takes on the responsibility of the house and our lives. And I just relax.
You talked about there being some laughs in your show. And let's remind everyone, it's The Reluctant Traveller on Apple TV+. What makes you laugh? What are there British comedies that you enjoy?
Well, different things make me laugh. I mean, I can go from the very broadside comedies, you know, like the Three Stooges,
yep.
who I yeah. loved when I was a kid, to kind of the old Laurel and Hardy movies, to, you know, a good Noel Coward, you know,
play.
Are
we going to get out of the 30s or 40s here? Are we going to get up to date here?
Well, I go back. You know, I'm not a spring chicken, you know. I can go back and
is
throw around some big numbers.
Comedy you love. Is that British comedy right now, or do you not have much time to take it in?
Right now, in terms of contemporary, I really gravitate to things that are more grounded in truth. You know, films and storylines that have a truthful resonance to them,
okay.
and the comedy naturally either comes out of character or comes out of the story, but it's not so much, you know, joke and joke and joke. I appreciate a good joke,
yes,
but in terms of the bigger picture for film or television, that's what I like to do, and that's for instance the line that my son and I took on our television show, you know. I don't know whether you can say it here.
Yeah, go, let's go for it.
Yeah, Schitt's Creek.
Yeah, well, that's fine.
But that's Schitt, and you know that's a real name.
Yes, I do.
It is a real name, and it's an, I believe, Irish derivation. And if I'm not mistaken, there actually is a Schitt's Creek in Ireland on the map.
I shared with you as you walked into the studio, that show effectively got me through COVID. Was it as much a ball making it as it was watching it?
Yeah.
It must have been a blast.
I, you know, my, it was a great time with my son kind of coming up with the premise and kind of coming up with the show. But once we started shooting in Canada on the CBC.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just, I knew the show was working from the very first episode.
Did you? How can you the cast.
Okay. Okay. The cast just nailed it. Everybody was in character in the most perfect way from the get-go. You know, there was no developing. Nothing had to be developed as you go. And I got a strong sense that, wow, this is going to be a really charming.
But everything worked. The writing, the acting, the directing,
yeah.
the filming, the editing. I mean, it was just on point everywhere you look, Eugene.
But I think the key was it was real. It was not playing anything for laughs.
Yeah.
It, you know, there was, it was, I don't think you could find a false moment in any one of the characters.
There's no way we can ever get you back to do anything, you guys, again. We can't put the show on ice or something.
Well, you know,
ice.
Never say never. It's you know, we my son has always said, you know, when the germ of an idea comes up that takes us from a starting point of where we left off in terms of quality, to where we can go with it, then that would be that would be a good starting point to figure out what that project is. We would love to get together again and you know, do something. I don't know whether it's another series, but right now there's nothing in the wind except the fact that everybody's dying to get together and do it.
Well, that's quite a driving force. It's been such a tonic seeing you. We talk about politics and the horrors of the world on this show most of the time. It's been an absolute treat.
Talk about horrors of the world.
You want to hang around and do that?
I can certainly do it. Believe me, I have an opinion or two.
You do. Do you want to share any of them?
Well, no.
I know that you're happy with life in the United States at the minute.
In the United States, well, you know, I work on visas, so I'm, mum's the word.
Yeah. It's been great having you. Thank you. Eugene Levy is actor, presenter of The Reluctant Traveller. Catch it on Apple TV+. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Nick.
9:45 LBC News headlines now. Thomas Watts.
Sir Keir Starmer has called for a very robust response from the Commissioner of the Metropolitan Police after secret filming uncovered racism, misogyny and officers bragging about using excess force. Immigration ministers told Nick that changes to the asylum system will create a level playing field, and Israeli authorities have intercepted a number of boats from an aid flotilla bound for Gaza. LBC weather, cloudy with rain for many, drier in southeast England, a high of 20 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Still long delays on the A40 eastbound to the Medway underpass. A coach has broken down, so one lane is closed. Still busy as well on the North Circular Road southbound at the Hanger Lane Gyratory, but all the lanes are back open. But for now, the queue goes all the way back to the Harrow Road underpass. At Norwood Junction, there's been an accident on the High Street at Station Road, so that's causing queues. And at Gatwick Airport, the A23 airport way is very busy northbound because a bus has broken down. On the Underground, the Central Line suffering with severe delays and trains aren't stopping at St Paul's station, and Greater Anglia are suffering with delays of about 15 minutes between Romford and Chelmsford and also up to Billericay.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
Metropolitan police officers displaying all the usual isms again, and yet their boss won't call it institutional. Why not?
James O'Brien on LBC.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345-6060-973, LBC.
Stayshore. What is Stayshore? Stayshore is not just the UK's favourite travel insurance. Stayshore is the confidence that comes with knowing that you're covered by the company with more five-star reviews on Trustpilot than any other provider. A company that welcomes people of all ages with pre-existing medical conditions for single or multiple trips. So Stayshore with Stayshore Travel Insurance. UK's favourite relates to number of five-star Trustpilot reviews, T's and C's and verifications at stayshore.co.uk/reviews.
It's great up here in the London Eye.
But imagine being inside. Perfect panoramic views of the capital from iconic pods.
Then get two Sun Super Day stickers to the London Eye. 34,000 available from £19 and thousands on the Sun for free.
Pick up the paper this Saturday to start collecting only in the Sun.
T's and C's apply, even for seagulls.
When BP asked me to read the voiceover for their new Wild Bean Cafe ad, I thought I knew what to expect. But when they told me I'd be reading the script next to a mountain waterfall, on horseback, strumming a harp, in a hailstorm, naked, ow, 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 ow. Well, that was wildly unexpected. Just like Wild Bean Cafe having a freshly ground signature espresso blend for everything from Americanos to flat whites in a fuel station. Wowzers. Wild Bean Cafe, only at BP. Subject to availability at selected BP stores only.
Play Set for Life from the National Lottery. Winners get 10k every month for 30 years. You could win on repeat. Set for Life. Play now on the National Lottery app. Terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
A lot of love coming in for Eugene and the Schitt's Creek team. Alison, I loved it. Best show ever. Ali, I watched it twice. I never stopped laughing. So that did lift the mood. Let's come back to important conversations. We'll be talking more about Michelle Moon with you. Michelle Moon with you, Stuart, in just a moment. Jordan's in Worcester, though, to pick up on this digital ID idea. And as soon as the Prime Minister got behind it, support seemed to evaporate. Would it work, by the way? Good morning.
Hello, good morning. Yes, I don't think he's going to get people to be able to buy into it because of, as you've discussed, the weight put across and the communication. And I feel the key word that's wrangled with people is the word mandatory, followed up closely by you will not be able to. And I think that is what is not sitting well with the British public.
If we back the up then, do you like the idea if we back up a little?
It's definitely the mandatory part, and it's the knowing, it's the meat on the bone, and it's knowing where it's going to go and how it's going to be used. In terms of, as a British citizen here, born here, I have my passport, I have my driving licence, my birth certificate and my national insurance number.
Mm-hmm.
I can't work without those. Keir Starmer will go on TV and say it's to stop people from illegally working. Well, I can't work without those. So explain to me why I need a digital ID. And this is where they're failing to communicate. Well, exactly why I need that, as opposed to the other form of IDs I have.
So here's let me share a conversation I had with someone within the Labour Party this week about this. And they said they did concede that perhaps they should be selling it as well on the ease. That is to say, if you needed to rent a property, currently I understand I'm not renting a property, but I'm going to have to find 2 or 3 months of electricity bills or Sky bills or a bank statement or whatever it might be. And they would say if we sold it on ease, all that would be done away with. Everything that you might need to produce your digital ID for, i.e. collecting a pass or whatever it might be, where you'd show your driver's license or you'd show your passport, this will all be done with a digital ID. So there's an ease aspect
as well.
Of course, yeah. There's an ease aspect.
So there is, yes. And that's obviously, that's where they're trying to be a bit more amicable with it. But when you follow up an example of how it will make your life easier and then say it's mandatory, the two things don't sit too well together. And obviously the example you've just given is about rent and renting a property. The initial outroll was about work and you will not be able to work. So obviously no. I'm sitting here and I'm wondering where this continues to, because I'm in a career, I don't have a job, I consider myself to have a career where I anticipate I'll be doing it until I retire. I have all my forms of ID, I don't envisions myself moving employer, changing job or anything like that. So I sit here thinking, well, why do I need a digital ID? But in 2 years' time, I'm due to renew my mortgage. Am I going to be able to renew my mortgage if I haven't signed up to the digital ID? Will my passport and my birth certificate and my national insurance number, everything, suddenly become invalid and I need this one digital ID, and they haven't quite communicated that.
Lastly, they talk about carrot and stick, or in political circles, they talk about nudge, trying to nudge people rather to force them. I think you've nailed it, Jordan, in that a lot of, particularly British people, we don't like to be told that something has to be mandatory. We don't like to be told we have to do it or else. If we were told, look, it's so much more convenient for you. All you need to do, offer your mobile phone, you'll be able to get parcels, you'll be able to pay for everything. Do you see what I'm saying? There is a different sell in that tactic.
It's very similar to contactless and cash. People don't like it when they go into a shop and they're told it's contactless only, we don't take cash. People don't like that. However, if I go into a shop and there's the option, it's convenient for me just to tap my phone. But people don't like being told this is the way it is. They like the choice. And can I just make one final point?
Briefly,
just to tie into your other conversations. I think people still have a very bad taste in their mouth about COVID contracts and things like that.
Oh,
and you've been talking about Michelle Moan this morning, and I'm sure you're aware, whether you're allowed to discuss it or not on your show, but the contract for the digital ID is becoming quite a hot topic online, and people are linking it to the Blair family. Yes. And Ewan Blair.
That's
and
right.
And people will immediately get the back up and think, you're telling us this is mandatory, it's because your mate's going to profit from it. And I think COVID and the contracts and things like that have left a very distrustful taste in people's mouths.
Jordan, well said. Enjoyed our conversation. Have a good day. Thank you. Let's come back to Michelle Mern. Let's come to the money side of it. Stuart's in Harrogate. Stuart, I'm told by someone you have a speciality in this field.
Yes, thank you, Nick, for taking my call. I'm a retired insolvency and restructuring lawyer.
Right.
Just to build on one of the comments that were made earlier concerning the inquiries that the administrators of MedPro will be carrying out.
Mm.
Once they've done that, they submit a report on the conduct of the directors to the Secretary of State to Business and Trade, in this case Peter Kyle.
Mm-hmm.
If he considers it expedient, he can issue an application to disqualify the directors for a period between 2 and 15 years.
What does that mean? Disqualification then would mean what as regards finances?
Well, I was coming on to that, Nick.
Right.
What happens then is that the court does have power, if it considers that the loss was due to the misconduct of the directors, to make a compensation order against them. So this is commonly used in relation to bounce back loans that have resulted in relation to that. But there is no reason why it should also include substantial deficiencies like £122 million if the court considers that that led to the loss that the company has sustained. That therefore imposes personal liability on the directors, and it's up to them to pay.
Hang on. Sorry, I've got a bit of a cough today. So the £122 million debt that's currently with MedPro could be transferred to Mr. and Mrs. Baroness Moan and Doug Barrowman?
Well, effectively, yes, by the making of a compensation order against them, because that's what is contained in the Company Directors and Disqualification Act. And the court has a discretion.
Now, you've worked in this all your life. This was your bread and butter. In reality, how doable, how likely is the debt that's against a firm can be moved against the individual or individuals? In reality, how often is that going to happen?
It happens. It's happened on a regular basis in disqualification actions against directors who effectively overstated their turnover, for example, to get a bigger bounce back loan than the company was entitled to. That's the sort of misconduct. And in the context of the judgment that Mrs. Justice Cockerell has handed down, there does appear to be at least some indication that there could be a report made which could result in a compensation order.
Lastly, and briefly, if you can, the administrators were called in the day prior to the judgment. Surely red flags or red lights are flashing on the dashboard over that.
Well, they've got a statutory duty to report on the conduct, Nick, and therefore they will be reporting on the conduct of the directors, and they will take the report to Peter Kyle, and it'll be up to him to decide what to do. But he does have the power to issue disqualification proceedings if he wants to.
And would they be looking to see if funds were transferred out of MedPro days prior to the administrators being... do they have that power to do that?
Absolutely.
And they'll be trying to find out what cash, because it's down to 666,000 and change or whatever it is. They'll be looking to see if money came out from that.
Well, yes, that would be an incidence of misconduct if that was the case, because you've got to treat your creditors equally.
Right.
But the main point is that the compensation order is a consequence of disqualification, and the court can, if it considers it expedient, make such an order in the appropriate circumstances. So I just wanted to add that as a possible concern.
And I've got all this advice free. You're not going to charge me £300 an hour as a lawyer. I've done well on this one. Stuart, thank you very much indeed. I didn't have a 7 minutes billing section anyway. Stuart, you had the last word. Apologies to others, but we're done for the day. James O'Brien keeps the conversation going the other side of the news on LBC. I'm back with you tomorrow morning for Arm 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock. And what's in a name? How important are words, semantics? The Commissioner of the Metropolitan Police refusing or declining. Oh, there you go. It's quite a good example, isn't it? There's a difference in impact between those two words. Refusing feels a lot stronger than declining. But either way, he hasn't agreed with Baroness Casey's conclusion that the police force over which he presides has institutional problems. Institutional racism, institutional misogyny. I think we should probably have a crack at defining precisely what we understand that word to mean, and then we can consider whether or not Mark Rowley is a doubling down on a rather silly mistake.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the head of the Metropolitan Police has told LBC there will be fast-track proceedings to sack officers caught in an undercover sting. Footage shows officers based at Charing Cross bragging about using force and making racist and sexist comments. Those involved have been suspended. Sir Mark Rowley, who has issued an apology, has described it as ghastly behaviour.
In our sort of anti-corruption command, many of the SIOs, the senior investigating officers in our anti-corruption command, have got organised crime and counter-terrorism experience. And we will keep going until it's gone. I believe the progress we've made so far, there's nearly 1,500 who've gone. I've got rid of a lot of noise out of the system. I've cleared out a lot of the legacy of people who should have been thrown out some time ago. And now we're digging deeper into those tumours that are buried in the organisation.
But Sir Mark has again declined to describe the Met as institutionally racist and misogynistic. Sir Keir Starmer is to discuss plans to reform the asylum system at a meeting of European leaders. They include changing the requirements for long-term settlement and ending refugees' automatic right to bring their families to the UK. Leaders will also discuss the war in Ukraine at the talks in Copenhagen this morning. A Conservative frontbencher has urged Michelle Mohn to resign from the House of Lords. A company linked to Baroness Mohn, who's had the Tory whip suspended, has been ordered to repay £122 million for breaching a pandemic-era contract. The Shadow Energy Secretary, Claire Coutinho, has called on her to relinquish her peerage. The British government says it's very concerned about Israel's interception of an aid flotilla bound for Gaza. A number of the 44 boats taking part have been stopped from reaching the territory. Israeli authorities say it was done so safely, with passengers taken to the port of Ashdod. A group of Thames Waters lenders has put forward a new rescue deal. The firm, which remains on the brink of nationalisation, could see some of its £20 billion debt pile written off. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was up 9 at 94.55. The pound buys $1.34 and a euro 14. LBC weather cloudy with rain for many places but drier in the southeast. A high of 20 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Sean has had some good ideas over the years, but using Canva was a really good one. Sean designed some social posts to promote his friend's car boot sale. They looked good. Really, really good. Next thing he knows, someone came and bought the lot, including the car. Now Sean doesn't know how he's going to get home.
Thanks, Canva.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 10 is the time, and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Don't forget that there was loads of it. Michelle Mohn and her husband suffered the misfortune, if you like, or certainly in her case, of being by far the most famous of the individuals involved in these so-called VIP lanes and sundry other scam-adjacent behaviours. But remember that that cronyism, that sort of potential corruption ran through that administration with Boris Johnson and Dominic Cummings at the top of it, like Blackpool through a stick of rock. And never forget all of the people in my line of work who encouraged you to look the other way or get your little Boris Johnson flag out and wave it furiously every morning and ignored completely the obvious evidence that we were once again packaging up our country for the worst, the very, very worst of us. But I can't think of a phone-in at the moment, so feel free to suggest. You can produce the second hour of the programme today, should you so desire. If you can think of a way into the Michelle Moan scandal, then I will be all ears. You can WhatsApp me on 0345 606093 or text 84850. Two things, really. One is a bit of a confession. I have in the past conducted conversations on this radio programme. Almost forgot what it was there. I have in the past conducted conversations on this radio programme about documentary programmes on the television, possibly even about undercover investigations into police officers and police stations without having watched the whole programme. I hope I've always been honest with you about that. I hope I've always said to you, well, I've seen the clips, and the clips are often so compelling and comprehensive that you don't really need to see the whole programme. But on this occasion, I have actually watched the whole thing. I don't know why. It wouldn't normally be my choice of viewing, but the producer of this alleged entertainment mentioned to me yesterday, because it was in the newspapers, that the Met was braced for a bit of a scandal. And I just popped up. I watched, I tell you what, my favourite programme in recent years is The Equaliser, starring Queen Latifah. So I was watching one at Mrs. O'Brien is away for a few days, so my television viewing habits tend to head somewhat downwards very, very quickly. The Equaliser with Queen Latifah, if you've never seen it, I'd put it up there with Quantum Leap in my all-time favourites. The way that each self-contained episode just reaches parts that other television So anyway, I watched an episode of that, and then I watched Panorama. Panorama came round subsequently, and I didn't think I'd get to the end, because I've seen it all before. But, and this is probably a testament to the programme making as well as the filth, the quality of the filth that they uncovered among, I used that word accidentally actually, because of course the police used to be referred to as the filth, but that was an entirely unintentional pun. The quality, if you like, or the horrific nature of the footage was incredibly compelling, but I also think there was a really good bit of filmmaking going on there. It was put together in a really powerful way. And I watched it, and my jaw hit the floor. Again. I'm going to tell you something completely unrelated now. Even more unrelated than The Equaliser with Queen Latifah. I was coming back from tennis yesterday, and I was with my playing partner, one of my playing partners, and I saw some gloves on the ground, some children's mittens on the ground. So I picked them up and I put them on the railings on the fence. So you know you do that, right, if you're a good citizen. I put them on the railings on the fence, and he said, you probably think there's a secret camera around, don't you? You're only doing that to look good. And I thought, good Lord, that does occasionally cross my mind. Just at the strangest of times, you sort of think, you find yourself doing something nice and then thinking, gosh, I hope I'm doing this for the right reasons and not just because I want to appear to be nice. Or you can't find yourself thinking, what if there's a hidden camera over there and I've just walked past that homeless person and I haven't stopped to say hello or even give them a cup of tea or offer to buy them a sandwich? What if they're just a weird little, it's not a paranoia, it doesn't happen every day, but it's a thing, right? I'm not the only one that does it. I checked this morning, you do just occasionally think, it'd be great advice to give to somebody in a police station, behave as if one of your colleagues has got a secret camera. And it's a shame, because it doesn't actually address the poison inside you, the racism, the misogyny, whatever it may be, but it's quite a good bit of advice. Always behave as if the producer has got a secret camera. Never do anything that you wouldn't be happy for your neighbours to sit down and watch when you're at work. And, I mean, at home as well, probably, but that's really good advice. And you would have thought by now that the Metropolitan Police would have learned that the likelihood of somebody either reporting on their misconduct or even recording their misconduct was a little bit higher than it is for, you know, the average bus driver. Or the average accountant. One of the moments in the thing last night, the Panorama last night, and to be absolutely clear, the questions that I've got coming do not depend upon having seen the programme, okay? But the
one of the elements of it was that one of the particularly unpleasant police officers did actually make jokes about the undercover reporter being being a secret journalist filming him. And that, he was brilliant, this lad, this undercover reporter, because he didn't just sort of laugh it off. He almost built upon the joke. He sort of became part of the joke and came back to it. He circled back to it. I think that's called comedic recall, when a comedian goes back to a joke that you laugh at even more because you feel that you're in on something, because you can remember the reference point that they're going back to. So he sort of circled back to the joke that he might be filming this bloke who was just...